bored you people, excuse me. I had a little something there.
Something stuck on the
phone. Oh, yeah, I'm good. I'm good now, though.
Are you okay, Rob?
I almost died, Kevin. Thank you for asking.
I thought that was a laugh.
No, it was. That would be a very demonic laugh, wouldn't it? That was.
I know. Bad. I got nervous about what we're expecting on this show.
Well, here's what... I'm glad you asked that, Lauren, because what we are expecting on this show is a very, very varied bag, wildly varied bag of things, because we've got... We're going to start with the Bears. Then we're going to move our way to what's happening in Washington with Michael Steele as we continue on CLTV and WGN everywhere. And then I have, right here in the 4 o'clock hour, as we await to rejoin the radio show, because the White Sox are on right now. What inning are they in, Ken?
They are in the
bottom of the fifth inning. And I would say that... That 4 o'clock hour is going to be pretty much all us improvising.
Okay, watch out, is what we've learned. If history is any guide, it's sort of it gets a little wacky sometimes.
We'll be off the CLTV, not have any responsibility to anything but the internet. And you know how the internet is such a responsible place. Nothing ever happens on the internet that shouldn't happen.
And management, don't forget. Sometimes they frown upon some of the things we talk about when we hit the stream.
Now, here's the thing, though. Management is not listening to the stream right now.
Oh.
They're listening to the radio, which is,
How do you know they're not listening?
Because
to the
I walk through the offices.
Oh, good.
And this stream
good.
Is not on.
Good. A little
they have
intel.
They have to turn on their smart speakers to listen to it, and they didn't even think to do it.
I like what you did there, though.
It looks like they're in a meeting, too, so.
Oh.
Yeah, we're clear.
Evil left for a reason. I knew it.
Yep. Okay. All right. That may be true. And then once we hit to the 5 o'clock hour, top five, Tamon Bradley's going to join us. We get ready for Lori Lightfoot's speech where, we're just going to be told to,
open your wallet.
Yes. Bend over. Here it comes again.
Take out your purses.
that's basically
turn them upside down.
Yeah. I've been to medical exams that will be
less painful,
far more pleasant than what I think what we're going to hear in this speech by the mayor. So we'll find out.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to talk to Tamon because already you're starting to see some of the themes as well as some of the potential solutions being floated out there. I know the mayor says she wants to hear from taxpayers. She wants to hear from citizens. She wants your ideas. She's listening.
Sure. Right.
However, she does already, it seems, there are a few themes to where they're going to go to get some of the money, $1 billion, not a small amount.
$1 billion, yeah. And by the way, if you're sitting in the suburbs and you're laughing, you're like, look at Eva laugh. And you're thinking out there, you're like, look at what the city's doing.
Yeah, I don't care. It doesn't affect me.
You just wait. There may be something in this for you, too.
I know. Well, you've seen cities tax people as they come in and use the roads. You've seen that kind of thing happen in other cities. I'm not going to suggest that's what she's going to say, but our mayor, we'll see.
I think we should just recruit Dr. Evil. He seems to find ways to get $1 billion or million, whatever movie you're watching.
I think we should come up with our own ideas. You know?
She's quite right, actually.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Let us, let me just say this. Kevin went to the new Bears facility today. We're going to talk about that as well.
Nice.
As they get ready they're coming down to the lakefront right now to walk around in circles. Where all the starters will be wheeled out in carts like Hannibal Lecter out onto the field just because they're there, but they won't be allowed to step on the turf. They're going to be completely wired into the cart. They'll be moved around. They'll have one arm, which they're allowed to wave, and then they have to put that arm right back down.
That's how you'd have it.
Yeah.
I'm hoping for Chicago, windy, a little bit of rain conditions to see what Piñera can do.
Is it going to rain tonight?
I think later on, so I don't know if it's going to happen.
Can we hold the game until... Can we ask if we could just...
rain delay, but, the other way for once?
I think earlier they said the chances of rain are more north of the city than city southwards.
Can we move the game up north? So I'd like to see this, too.
Play at Hallis Hall.
Maybe we should move the game to the Path of Dorian out in Florida somewhere.
All right. Now, what kind of craziness is that? Are you on Khalil Mack in the middle of all that?
We wouldn't want that.
Just put Piñera down there.
Yeah. Well, Piñera was from down there.
Yeah, he'd be at home.
Shouldn't he have? He must have kicked in a hurricane at some point.
Have a kick here. It's supposed to be windy.
Let's just put those big fans out. That's what we want to see.
Mm-hmm.
We should make him kick everything 60 yards, no matter where they are.
If we get every citizen in Chicago to stand above and just blow down.
I like that.
Okay.
Oh, I don't think we'll all fit, but, you know.
You need some water, Rob?
I don't think I'm going to survive this show. All right. So was it, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but just give me the elevator pitch here. Was it amazing, the new facility?
A perfect combination of new age football technology while honoring the past and the endless amount of tradition the Chicago Bears have.
100 years of tradition.
100 years of tradition. Some incredible memorabilia scattered throughout the entire facility, and then some crazy technology and everything you could possibly want in that sort of complex. I think they did a great job with it.
Somehow, some way, and I don't exactly understand this completely, but this is the 100th year of the NFL. Mm-hmm. And the charter franchises of the NFL that are still in existence are the Chicago Bears and the Green Bay Packers. Now, the Green Bay Packers celebrated their 100th anniversary last year, so they're 101 years old. I can't
we're
figure out how that works.
We're always ahead of the
game. Yeah. I don't know what that means. That means that they had their own kind of league.
Their own game?
Then there was the NFL was founded when Curly Lambeau and George Halas sat down with I guess Roger Goodell. I don't know who. I don't know who they were sitting down
Wait,
with.
How could you
Pete
be
Rozelle?
The
I don't
only
know.
Team? Who would you play?
It was like a football club, wasn't it? And then George Halas was like, "Hey, your league stinks. Why don't you join our league?"
Yeah, I think they were. These were all like factory.
Yeah,
these were guys.
Acme Packing Group.
Right. These were all factory teams that were, they were hearing about college football and going to see college. College football would get 100,000 people into a stadium when the Rose Bowl was built.
Oh yeah.
It was 100,000 people.
Well, that's how George, one of his promotional moves was having his Bears play a group of college all-stars. And it packed about, I think they had like 100,000 people at Soldier Field.
Right.
Long, 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 long time ago.
Actually, when I was a kid, that game still existed. The college all-star game against a professional team.
Yeah, that would never
work today. Yeah, that would never work today.
No. That'd be cool to see.
Yeah.
It'd be brutal.
I mean, I was very little, but I remember that was still, it was in existence until the 70s.
According to the Packers website, August 19th, 1919 mm-hmm. is when they were founded.
So that would be 100 years.
So I don't know what's going on there.
I don't know. Last year they celebrated the 100th. Kim, am I right? Last year they celebrated the 100th year.
Well, maybe this is the end of the 100th year and they started at the beginning of the 100th.
They're like those sweet 16ers.
Why didn't we do that then?
I don't know.
Because they just, again, they're like those sweet 16ers that are like, I want to celebrate early. And I want the biggest party and the best car.
That does not sound like a Packer fan.
Sounds like Aaron Rodgers.
Well, not a Packer fan.
That sounds like somebody Lauren really hated in high school.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe as the Green Bay Packers, right? Because weren't they just
they were the Acme Packers.
Packing, whatever.
Acme Packers before that.
So the Green Bay Packers were found.
Right.
Now maybe the Acme Packers
they
were
have a 16th month, according to the Green Bay Press Gazette.
Oh, yeah, they're good.
Very legitimate news source.
Very.
Fake news.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, all the glowing things they say about Aaron Rodgers, I don't know if you're going to take this, but take it for what it's worth. They said that they have a 16-month birthday celebration. So over the course of 16 months, they celebrate their 100 years.
I was up there. Oh, maybe. Because
we have a lot to celebrate. It takes 16
what
months.
What a bunch of horse crap is that? Because I was up there last summer, in the middle of the summer, and they had already put up the banners. And then the next week, they had built a beautiful hotel right across from Lambeau.
Mm-hmm.
And they were having some gigantic soiree there. With I think they were digging up dead Packers and, you know, bringing them in.
Oh.
Be part of maybe the cold bar or something. I don't know. We're eating the shrimp off Ray Nitschke. I don't know. There was something going on. And then they sent the then but that was like the 100th year. Okay, so why do they see they're always trying? They're so insecure in Green Bay because they're so tiny that they have to they're overcompensating.
Tiny but mighty.
I liked your playoff run last year. All right, I didn't like mine either. All right, I gotta go. Hold on, Jared Payton's gonna join us from Soldier Field. That's coming up. Show with Anna DeLantis on WGN Everywhere and CLTV. Hold on, CLTV is just rejoining us right now. So it is time for me to say that again, the Rokan Show with Anna DeLantis on CLTV.
Nice.
There we go. Kevin Powell's in the studio.
Good to be here.
Lauren Lapka's on, well, she's traffic and correcting of the record and getting even with people from high school, apparently.
Good.
Also today. I see that we got a little of that going.
Might as well.
And Kim Gordon, who I am no longer speaking with.
Because she's a Packer fan, and this is going to be a tough week.
It's going to be a long season for you guys.
Oh, fighting words.
Unfortunately, it's going to be a real short season for you guys.
Kim's the one who gave that 7-9 Sports Illustrated review. No bias there.
She was a contributor.
All right. Our friend Jared Payton is joining us right now. JP, you're at Soldier Field as you're getting ready for the final installment of what will be, I think, a very... it's sort of a low-key preseason, I think, because, you know, clearly Coach Nagy doesn't want to deal with injuries to key players. I think it's brilliant. And I also think, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, that this he's going to change what he's doing and a bunch of other coaches around the NFL, not all of them, but some of them, are doing. I think it's going to change the rules about the preseason. I think they're going to drop two preseason games now.
Well, I mean, it could happen, but, I mean, when you start to look at it, this is what Matt Nagy loves. He loves to be a trendsetter. He's done it here in Chicago, and now when you look at what the season means and when you have an opportunity to have a really good defense and offense that's surging right now and hopefully taking the next steps, you can't come into the season with guys injured. And so, to me, it just makes sense. I mean, playing this game and going through the preseason for guys like myself, when I was with the Tennessee Titans, it was just like, yo, I need these opportunities just to be able to make this squad. When you have guys that are legit stars, you have to be able to take care of them. He's done that. And I love the fact that these guys will run through a wall for Matt Nagy. And another thing, people are like, are they in condition? These guys are the most conditioned athletes in the world. And when I was in Indianapolis last weekend, I saw these guys running 100-yard sprints together as a team and doing sit-ups and push-ups right before. So they're ready to go. Keeping their body as fresh as possible, to me, is going to be key for this team to truly make a big run.
Let me just jump in on that for a second. This is a different NFL than it was when, even when your dad was playing, but before that, the generation before. Your dad was actually one of the innovators of staying in shape all season long. Some of these guys would just go to their side jobs and drink themselves through the off season, and then come back. They'd come back in July and go, "What's going on, guys?" And they would and
then get into shape.
Right, especially the linemen. But I don't want to accuse anybody of anything. That's no longer the case. There's too much money on the line, and you know it's a 12-month season for these guys in terms of conditioning.
Yeah, it is, and I love the fact, Ro, that you brought that to knowledge for the people out there. It was different. My dad was this guy that was, I mean, he was getting in shape while everybody else was going out and spending their money and hanging out, going on vacations. He was working himself out to be ready for the season, and that's why he was able to say, "Listen, give me the ball 30 or 40 times if you need to.
Right.
I got this. I can make it happen." So. Yes, to see these guys now, totally different NFL than it was back then.
I mean, walking through the new Halas Hall today, JP, the equipment they have in there looks like it's from 100 years from now. It's stuff you've never even seen before. So to your guys' point, it's like state-of-the-art everything, crazy technology. I wanted to ask, who's a player we're not talking about enough that you think could have a big-time breakout year? We've talked about Roquan, maybe the Anthony Millers. Is there somebody that maybe hasn't been talked about enough that you think could have a big-time season?
It's funny that you say that, but it's someone that you know, but they're not talking enough about him because I don't get it. And I said this to my producer yesterday at WGN TV. To me, it's Allen Robinson. I don't think people are talking enough about what kind of player he is. I mean, he's a number one receiver, and even in this offense, his relationship with Mitchell Trubisky over this summer, you've seen it grow. We saw it grow at the end of the year, especially in the wild card game. But I think he's prime. If he can have a 1,000-yard season, that's only going to open up everything more for guys like Anthony Miller and all these other guys that are trying to be able to make plays. He has to be that number one guy, and I don't think people are talking enough about him and the connection between him and Trubisky.
Yeah, we were talking with Adam Hogue earlier this week about Mitch Trubisky and how I said, look, the double doink has stuck with me throughout the entire offseason, but so has the Mitch Trubisky Allen Robinson connection in that playoff game. Robinson, I think, had over 130 yards. He had the huge catch that got him in field goal range. But I think that, to me, that was a flash of what that could be, where this offense is so dynamic with a lot of playmakers, but you still kind of want your receiver or your quarterback, a young quarterback, to have the go-to guy. That could be Robinson.
Yeah, I mean, you want to see Trubisky to be able to take that next step. That's what everybody's talking about, and I totally get it. But you have to tip your hat to this organization, Ryan Pace, to be able to now look at the guys that he has around him, the skill position. I mean, it's amazing. He's got it all levels. He's got guys that can make plays. And so I went back to my days of being in Miami, and we had a guy like Ken Dorsey who had all of these guys that all he had to do was get them the football. That's what Trubisky has to do this year. Don't try to do too much. Get the guys that make plays for you. Get it in their hands. Let them do the work and make you look good. And so for me, second year in this offense, he's got it down just a little bit more. They're going to add some more wrinkles. I can't wait to see what they throw out next Thursday against that team from Wisconsin.
I don't mention them.
I don't for this whole week on WGN, I will not say the name.
Do not say, right.
The team from Wisconsin. Eddie Pinheiro, JP, you think he's the guy? I know it's such a small sample size, but he's going to get some reps tonight. But what have you seen from Pinheiro?
I don't know if he's the guy yet, Kev.
Guys,
I don't know. This kid, he's not kicked in a regular season game before. So, like, we've seen him in, you know, preseason. I've seen him at camp. He had an up and down camp. Hopefully now he can take it over. Listen, that position is like being a golfer, man. You got to work on your swing. You can perfect it. Be great. He can just now, him being the guy, I want to see what happens tonight. Tonight's going to be a test to see what he can do. If he knows now he's the guy, he's been getting all the kicks, can he take advantage of his opportunity and show the Chicago Bears that he can be the guy? If not, we got cuts coming up. There's going to be a lot of guys on the street, and there's going to be a lot of guys available. So you just never know. And that's one of those positions that you can, if you find someone, plug them in, it could be there right away. It's not like trying to learn the offense or defense and bring the guys in. That's a little bit harder.
But after the 58-yarder last week, do you think it seems like that was a huge confidence builder for fans, probably for the team in the front office. Do you think that this is, he's a lot closer to becoming the Bears kicker than he was before that?
Oh, God.
Yes, I definitely think so. I think he's got a lot of confidence. I think the guys in the locker room have confidence in him. I think whoever is really going, other than probably Cody Parkey, they probably wouldn't tell you that they have confidence in whoever is going to go. And, yeah, listen, being around this team, I've been around great teams, been on some really, really good teams. When you're around guys, they elevate your game, especially when you have star players. When you have a guy like Khalil Mack, a guy like Eddie Robinson, Eddie Jackson, you want to be able to up your game just a little bit. And I feel like being around inside of this locker room, whoever's in there, they're going to want to do their best and do whatever. So I have confidence in that young man that he can hopefully get it done.
JP, I'm looking forward to Tuesday morning. We get to see your dad's statue outside Soldier Field.
Oh,
man, I'm telling you guys, I just walked through the Waldron lot and walked up and saw that they already had the base ready to go. And I am like, I'm jacked. I cannot wait. I am so excited because it's amazing, man. It is amazing. And it's only right that it's here at his second home at Soldier Field. And I'm going to be able to see it every single time that I come to a game and look at it. It looks just like him. And
you've seen the mock-up of it.
Yes. Now I saw it when it was clay and the clay portion of it. And I remember walking in and my mom and I together flew out to Pennsylvania and saw it with the Bears. And we looked at it and we were waiting for it to like blink its eyes and start talking.
Wow. Oh God, like, come on now. Oh, that's going to make me cry. Do not make me cry on my own show. Don't do that.
Speaking of that, Jared, former best friend over here, Lauren, what about savoring sweetness? I'm excited about that.
Ooh, let me tell you, Wednesday night, a special we're doing, an hour special. I was only supposed to be a half hour. It got bumped up to an hour. And it's me telling the story of who I think my dad is, what he meant to me, and what he meant to this city. And it's going to take you around. Your emotions are going to go so up and down because it's my mom talking about their relationship and how they met and like dig deeper than what you've seen before and like other things like Beyond the Glory or a Football Life. It's a little bit deeper and it's just cool to hear these stories and to be able to tell it myself. It's been a process and a lot of red tape we've had to go through to get stuff done, But I think Chicago fans and people of Chicago who love my dad and love football will truly, truly love this hour special. And it's at 7 p.m. on next Wednesday night.
Oh, gosh.
Perfect way to lead up to the game, in my opinion.
Right? I mean, I'm trying to find a place to have a watch party. So if anybody knows where I can have a bunch of people to watch.
He's got a great deck. Have you heard about his deck? It's outdoors. It's perfect for this kind of weather.
I think he's looking for like a couple hundred people. I believe I will be thrown out of my
neighbors.
Yeah. Don't anybody mind. We got the Peyton family. Well, actually, I'd do anything you want.
Do it for Jared. Do it for Walter.
I do anything.
Money for you. Whatever you need, I'll take care of you. Come on,
let's work on this.
We're family.
Yes, that's true. Your father was such an inspiration to me as a kid. Like, you know, the people who grew up in that prime era of being little kids and watching your dad, and then, you know, kind of coming to maturity through his career. It is, as you did. It's just an absolute honor to be a Bears fan because of him. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, there's great tradition in this franchise, but there's nothing like Walter Payton, and there's nothing like what Walter Payton means to the NFL. And so to have this moment where this statue is going to be erected, and there's going to be another 100 years of people walking to that stadium and going past that thing, and there will be traditions that will, you know, become part of that, because football fans are a little different than baseball fans who might want to mock a statue of some guy that's outside of a stadium. I think it's going to be it's so iconic, and it's so it's such a religious experience. Bro, with a little R, it's going
to
be something.
Bro, you're going to make me cry, man. Stop, dude. You just gave me a bunch of chills. Yeah. I'm not supposed to be crying on radio. Come on, man.
Oh, it's okay. I'm fine.
It's an emotional time.
It is. Oh my God, it's just the most beautiful thing. And if this doesn't do it, my friend. This everything is coming together in a really nice way for this season to be a very special season. However it ends, very special season for this franchise. So that's all.
It's set up right, man. I appreciate you guys for having me.
Thanks,
as
JP.
Always.
Thank you, Jared.
You guys are the best.
All right, Jared Payton. See him on CLTV. He's on CLTV right now.
Yeah.
And we're on CLTV with him right now. I don't know what I meant. I honest to God, I don't even know if I can go out to this thing.
Yeah.
To the statue?
Yeah.
12 feet tall, 3,000-pound bronze statues of him and George Papa Bear Halas, both there. I mean, it is going to be emotional. Can you imagine? I mean, people are just going to go there and just be in awe looking at it, Bears fans.
There's
two separate statues. So when you walk underneath that Waldron Deck Bridge, mm-hmm. Which is such a cool moment if you're a fan, because you go underneath the bridge, and then as you kind of get through it, then you see Soldier, right? You know, the south entrance,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the stairs leading up to it. So one statue is going to be on each side of the staircase.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful.
Because driving past it, that's what it looks like. It looks like there's two platforms being built. So,
right. So it's like goalposts, essentially, that you're going
Don't
through.
Bring up goalposts here in this precious moment.
Double goalposts, yeah.
But I think it's fitting, right? There should be more Bears stuff around Soldier Field. There's so much history inside of it, and obviously around it, too, but considering the amount of statues in this town, it's going to feel right. When you have that moment, you're walking into a Bears game to see Walter Payton and George Halas.
Yeah.
It's just perfect.
No question. And you just heard JP say it. It's that Tuesday it's going to be unveiled. So Thursday, when everybody goes to the game,
right.
It's going to be there on full display.
Yep.
The Man of Steel is here to discuss the
That boy ain't right. Now I know what that reminds me of. Pigs in Space from the Muppets. Remember Pigs in Space?
You're really going to pull something one day. Yes.
Listen.
I was going to say, that actually sounds like you already have.
Well, you know what I have done? I pulled the wool over the eyes of these bosses around here that continue to pay me. That's what I've done. Hey.
That'll do it.
I wanted, you know, the president's about to, is he doing it now or did he just do it? He's going to sit down in the White House and he's going to stand there and they're going to pull out a flag and they're going to talk about the Space Force or they can't even decide now on the name of this thing, but it's the U.S. Space Command, which, by the way, I don't know, Michael, if you know this, but it already exists. That's the crazy thing about this.
Well, what?
Well, it does and it doesn't. It does to a certain extent. There are components and elements of that that are already operationalized. But what the president is doing, and I actually, you know what, it sounds a little like, really, what? But I kind of agree with it. Look, this frontier of space is something that is adventuresome, is exciting, but it's fraught with a lot of real problems. And I think it's a little bit smart. I mean, Reagan was in this area, in this zone, to sort of you know, have command of space, have a better control of yeah. that environment.
Mm-hmm. I
think it's smart to sort of think in those terms. So.
I do not disagree with you at all. But I just don't like the vanity of this. It is...
Well, there is that.
Yeah, well, that's true. I know there's nothing I can do about it now. It's way too late. The spaceship has sailed on this, but because the Air Force has had the Space Command for a long time, there's always been, and I think this is my little problem with this is that the Space Command as it was used through the military, a lot of it was top secret because it was intelligence gathering. And it was not about, it wasn't, you know, as transparent as some of the other branches or some of the other operations in the military. So the question is, do you want to do this to build it into this really kind of public thing, you know, and then have it, you still have to keep a very large component of this because it is weapons development, it's counterintelligence, it's intelligence, it's all those things that go on up there that are happening. From the 1960s on, we talked about how it's very, very famously you had Johnson say, I, for one, and this is before he was vice president of the United States, he was just a U.S. senator who was in charge of this space, you know, he had the committee in the U.S. Senate, very powerful committee, that was funding space programs in the 1950s. And jet programs and all that. And he said, I, for one, am not going to go to sleep by the light of a communist moon. Right? That was his, that was the famous statement of his that propelled us to go to the moon. Right? And so the moon was seen as a defense thing. You realize that Apollo 11, when Apollo 11 landed on the moon, there was an unmanned Russian spaceship that was landing on the moon that exact same time. As we were landing, because they wanted to get up there. When we got up there, it happened not to have landed successfully. It crashed,
mm-hmm.
You know. But it's that I get the importance of all this, but it just I would like to see it done in a way that is, sort of the way that we've always done it, which is the peaceful exploration of space, and that NASA I thought was always a beautiful, beautifully constructed concept, and now we're trying to make everything military.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. But I think what's where we are running into this new environment and why there should be a little bit more consciousness about what it all may mean in the future is that you've got a lot of private industry now deciding to go into space. You've got a car on its way to the sun. And of course the missions to Mars that everyone is planning, the commercialization of space, where in literally in about 20 years you'll be able to vacation on the moon. That's what people are moving towards, and that's good. But the truth of the matter is that also requires regulation and control, because the battle over minerals and natural elements that are going to be discovered from planets to big objects that floating by asteroids, mm-hmm. All of these things are going to need to be managed. But then the other element of this is that as governments begin to step deeper into this space, if you will, mm-hmm. right now we've been the sole real player. There's no one who can really compete with what the U.S. has done and is doing in space, unless you're China, which is now pushing hard on its space program. the Russians have reanimated their space efforts. And certainly we've had partnerships with the Russians over the International Space Station. But you're going to have more and more governments now, and even governments who've never played in space, beginning to look at that. Australia, for one, friendly towards us, but there are obviously others who are may not be as inclined.
Right. Yes.
So I think it's good to be on the tip of that to some degree and begin to sort of set out what it is. And we want to get into what's going on with the 23,000 plus satellites that are floating around around the planet right now. So
yeah,
there's a lot going on.
Michael, can I ask you about the Democratic debates? Because the debate stage is set now. It's going to be one night, ten candidates. I guess they didn't push it to 11, which would have been two nights. And you've got the Tulsi Gabbard kind of upset about not reaching it. I guess she reached the individual donor threshold, but she didn't reach exactly the poll threshold in those four polls that they look at. But she's complaining that, you know, hey, look, I have reached this threshold. Does she belong on the stage? Is this the right way to do it? Because you sort of feel as if you don't make it onto this stage, you don't have much longer in the race.
Well, and that's the problem. That's the problem because, Anna, you raised a couple of points that I think both Republican and Democratic, now Democratic primaries, have exposed. And that is trying to figure out how to actually allow candidates, whoever wants to run, to have a fair and equal shot at capturing the imagination of the voting primary public and positioning themselves to be considered viable for the presidency as you approach the primary season, as you approach the first primary. We're so hell-bent now on eliminating people as quickly and as soon as we can from the process because we don't know what to do with 20 people on a stage. Or, you know, we don't know how to conduct a debate with more than some requisite number. And I think that's sort of driven a number of these candidates to sort of rethink this process. I mean, will you consider... Right now, Andrew Yang is in the next debate.
Right.
You have Governor Bennett and others who are currently elected officials are not.
And so
for some people, that's a problem because a governor is someone who's actually had governing executive experience and maybe know a little bit of how to run a government or run a state or extrapolate that out to a country.
We're in that no man's land though.
Versus an internet guy who is going to give everybody $1,000.
Well, we're in that no man's land where the internet guy knows how to work the social media angle of this.
Oh, he does.
And as a matter of fact, you're noticing that a lot of the fundraisers are doing it on social media. Donald Trump did it on social media with the help of Cambridge Analytica and the Russians,
right.
But he did it. So that's where the outliers are. So guys who are like traditional, there's so many people in Washington. I mean, you know this, right? This has been so much of your adult life is you've been around these guys. So much of Washington was tradition. So much of Washington was, well, we're going to wait our turn. It's going to be it's not necessarily the best person, but it's the person who's been waiting out the longest. The Democratic Party did that in 16 with Hillary Clinton. It was like, well, you know, she's been around a long time, and, you know, she ran in 2008, and that didn't go so well, and so now this is going to be her chance. And that's just going with the person that is sort of like, you know, the one who the party thinks should be. Those days are over. Now, I would not say that is necessarily good for American history, because to your point, people who really know what they're doing, people who have respect for the systems that are in place, some of them need adjustment, but believe me, at the end of this, either next year or the 5 years from now, the end of this, those systems are going to need to be rebuilt anyway. So I think you want people who have some understanding of responsibility and how the American government and American values, which have always been represented by a certain amount of empathy, a certain amount of fair play, not always, but that's certainly what the dream has been, right? That's what we stood for. And that's why a lot of these government services are built on those principles, and now they're being torn away from those principles. So, you know, you need somebody to do that.
But here's the problem. We can't get there because of the way the system is designed. And here's really one of the things that sticks in my craw about this process, which is why, as chairman, I tried to tweak it a bit. Let's put it that way.
All right.
And was told, no, you can't do that. But I think it needs to be done. So you have candidates running for the presidency right now who are competing where? In Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Why? Because those are the first four states in the primary process. And the tradition in history has been those four states determine who gets to go on to the nomination. I have a problem with that, particularly starting in Iowa, which is one of the whitest states in the country. Why? I don't know. But there we are. Okay, but that's the process. They compete in those four states. So those candidates, like Tulsi Gabbard and others, and who find themselves on the outside looking in, have tried to compete in that space, but they're being judged and they're being asked to be measured by a national polling system. And you've heard me go on about national polls mm-hmm. before. They are meaningless because they are not running national campaigns. Candidates don't run national campaigns until there's a general election. All right? You run state-specific primary-focused campaigns. So I'm going to run in four states because those are the first four out of the box, and everyone tells me I got to win one or two of those first four if I have any life. I don't believe that, but that's what everyone says.
Well,
but you're asking me, you're judging me against how I'm polling in California and New Mexico and Mississippi, and nobody knows who I am in those states because I've not been there. Right. And so when you're Tulsi Gabbard pulling at 1.5%,
right,
she hasn't been there. Of course not. She's not wasted her resources to go to a state that's not going to be the first out of the box.
She also was on a 2-week military break.
Right.
So she was gone for two critical weeks here.
Gone for 2 weeks. So you have these candidates who now find themselves sort of up against it, having played the game the way they were told to play it, but are being measured by a measurement process that doesn't take into account what they've done. So, of course, Tom Steyer won't be on the stage. But you know what Tom Steyer is polling right now in Iowa? 5%.
He's polling 5% in Iowa.
Because he's got name recognition from spending tens of millions of dollars in television ads.
It doesn't matter how he's got it, but that's the point. That's making the point. He's concentrated his campaign in the space where he was told to concentrate his campaign.
Yeah. Okay.
But then you're judging him somewhere else.
All right. So here's the...
I get it. But here's the problem.
Yeah, is that, you know, I know the founding fathers were very, very particular about making sure that the urban areas, and I know that the world was very, very different 240 years ago, but that the urban areas didn't dominate the rural areas. That's why we have the Electoral College.
Well, the founding fathers had that's not why we have Electoral College.
Well, also to
Electoral College because
the elites versus
gentry wanted to control who would become the president. It had nothing to do with suburbs and
No. Not that it was suburban, but they didn't want concentrated that, and again, landed gentry and concentrated influence, right? So what we have now is urban areas in this country in the presidential election system are underrepresented. And because of what you just pointed out, the first four states
how
to come up
represent it,
because with the exception of Nevada, which that doesn't even really have a Las Vegas, though large, kind of, you know, it's large in not really, it's got a lot more tourists than it does actual residents in it. The major cities, you don't get to the major city states. You don't get to California. You used to not get to California until the very end. They moved it up now, and New York and Illinois. I think Illinois might be the first one in. So when those states come up, it seems to me in the last, number of presidential cycles, it seems like the issues of urban America don't get addressed at all by these candidates going in.
They don't get addressed, period.
Well, that's why.
Whether it's the primary or it has nothing to do with the Electoral College. It has everything to do with what the focus is. The focus is on where white folks are concentrated. It's not focused on where where people of color are concentrated. That's never been a part of the political process. So, that was why what Johnson did with the Great Society policies were so revolutionary. I thought ill-conceived, but still revolutionary. It was that he, for the first time, did focus around those issues. But that was largely driven out of the civil rights momentum. Wasn't sort of a standalone kind of, oh, gee, I now like black folks. So, you know, I think from that standpoint, the reality of it is the process is geared to where traditionally the established order of things, those who make the order of things, have focused their attention. And that's largely been on issues that haven't focused on these urban communities. So that doesn't translate into the Electoral College because the numbers are the numbers. I mean, I'm the senator from, you know, a state that has a large urban population. I'm still the senator from that state that also represents the surrounding suburbs and exurbs.
Well, yes.
It's a matter of how where those votes, where the Electoral College numbers turn up. In other words, how those jurisdictions line up with their vote on election day.
I don't want to get too deep into the. I started this by getting us into the weeds. Now I'm going to pull us out of the weeds for a second about that. But my point is that what we're dealing with is that America. When we elect a president, we start in smaller states that I don't think are necessarily representative of the United States.
Yeah,
right. Exactly. In terms of demographics, exactly. But also in terms of you know, how they operate and what, you know, they tend to be single branded states in their own ways. Right. And very agricultural.
Which is why I've always said you should rotate it.
Yes.
Go into a lottery 2 years out. All the states go into a lottery and they draw lots to figure out where the first primary in the country is going to be held.
Nope. Once a month for 4 months, it's a regional primary.
Oh.
Regional primary. Once a month for 4 months.
Once a month for 4 months?
Yes. There's a primary that...
Look, I can't get you behind to the polls on one day. So, you know, come on.
Well, no, I'm just saying one day, a regional primary. So you start, and that will rotate. So you start in the north, let's say the Atlantic corridor.
That was one approach, yeah.
Yeah.
People talked about that.
Yes, and you do that in February.
I don't mind that. Look, I like anything better than what we're doing.
Yeah. And I think that would be more representative. And then you would have these guys show up in cities. They would show up in New York. They would show up in Chicago. They'd show up in Los Angeles. They'd show up in Boston. They'd show up in places that actually, where they would have to actually appeal to those audiences as well. Because we never hear from any of them. Ever. And then this expectation that Illinois is always going to be blue, because there was one point where everybody expected it just to be red, and then nobody else showed up. Except for one guy who was from here, who just happened to be black,
I mean,
and because he was black, he got everybody who was white crazy. That's what happened, Michael Steele.
Right.
Oh, gee.
I mean, this is the thing. I know we're a little late here, but it doesn't matter because we don't have to be on time for all of the. We're on the internet right now, and then CLTV, and then they left us. I want to know the answer to this. I got to know the answer to this.
I have no idea what you just said.
Okay. I know. I'm like, what?
It's okay. CLTV is the, you know, the TV thing that we're also on when you're on with us, and they've gone to a commercial break. So I just want this answered. In 2010, I mentioned this a couple days ago, when you had the people who were all animated in the Tea Party, right? And you had a little something to do with that. They were talking about fiscal responsibility. They were talking about executive order. They were talking about things that you just can't go into. You know, the president isn't a king. He doesn't get to just do things that he wants to go do because he thinks they're right.
Right.
All right. That was, am I right? That was basically the tenet of it.
That was basically, yeah.
Okay. All right. Now those people, primarily white, who were, you know, wearing the three-cornered hats and standing around with the muskets and the, you know, looking like Revolutionary War reenactors. I want to know, where are they today, and why aren't they out there today talking about this stuff?
Well, where they are today is firmly ensconced in the camp of Trump, and that's their new home. Those fiscal issues have largely been supplanted by personal interests. And the way the president has framed a lot of the narrative around those personal interests. And the personal interests I refer to are, they're coming across the border to take your jobs. or, you know, so therefore we need to spend money on a wall. They are they're taking your jobs overseas, or they're cheating in the process of doing so, and therefore we need to impose tariffs, which again plays into these fears, but also creates a drain in terms of what, you know, we've already stood for about spending and things like that. And they don't mind that as long as their particular interests are being addressed.
But not their non-economic issues. The New York Times had a great story about this, an analysis, really deep, long piece about the analysis of where these voters are, whether they're evangelical voters or conservative voters,
right,
and how they have changed their mind about these things, because it's not economic theory anymore that drives them. It's cultural identity that drives them, and
that's
really what it comes down to. All right, one last question before we let you go. Is God going to destroy Doral with a hurricane before the G7 meets there next year?
Oh, gee.
Let's put it this way. He may rearrange the patio furniture.
Okay. Thank you. That's all I wanted to know. You're closer to God than I am, so I just want to know if you've talked to him about that and what's actually going on.
Yeah, he may rearrange some of the patio furniture. Let's just go with that.
All I wanted to know. All right, Michael Steele, thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
You got it, my friend. Take care, guys. Bye.
Concho with Anna DeBlantis on 720 WGN. In a little bit. What inning are we in now?
Bottom of the eighth. White Sox trailing by a touchdown.
Yeah.
10-3 Twins right now. Bottom of the eighth.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's not the score you want?
No.
Not ideal.
No. If Manis can just get in the end zone, I think we're going to be okay.
Yeah.
But apparently, it's not going to be happening.
Best Tariq Cohen impression or something. I don't know.
We're out at the Sox game last night, and our friend Connor Murphy was there.
Right, he threw out the first pitch.
Our beloved Blackhawk. Uh-huh. We got to hang out with him a little bit. Got kicked out of one of the clubs at the White at the guaranteed rate.
You got kicked out?
Yeah, I just followed him in.
And what's wrong with that?
Well, apparently I wasn't supposed to just follow him in.
Oh.
Because we were hanging out. Come on, let's go get something to drink, something to eat. And we walked in and they're, sir. It was a little bit of that.
Oh, God.
So, yeah, got a little...
Did you say, do you
don't
know who
you
I am?
Don't you know who I am? Yeah. And
then
they
what
said,
happened?
Yes, you're going to have to leave. So that's how that worked.
It's a good effort.
Yeah.
He got the ball over the plate, solid first pitch, didn't embarrass himself.
He described it, because we were on our way out there when it happened. Mm-hmm. You beat us out there.
Yeah.
He described it as a blazing strike. I don't know if that's exactly what it was.
It was like a blazing strike, except the complete opposite. It was sort of a looper right over the plate.
Yeah, I like the confidence, though.
Sell it. If you're going to do it, sell it. You're Connor Murphy.
Yeah. Right, and if no one saw it, that's right. The best way to go. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Pop that glove. Boom.
Ballpark's not too packed right now, eh? I'll tell him it was a heater.
Right, he's from Columbus, Ohio, and he talks like that.
He still talks like that. Yeah. They all do.
Canadian accent, or a hockey accent.
Yeah. So he's, you know what's interesting? We were talking about athletes staying in shape all season long. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was talking about that. He's like, that's what they do. That's what they do when they're in the gym all the off season, and now he just can't wait to get on the ice. It's
he's getting itchy.
Up. Yeah.
He was like, just want to play. What did he tell us? Like 3 hours a day some days he's in the gym.
Yeah, they're machines.
I mean, that's not like when you and I go to East Bank Row when we just talk most of the time.
You mean when we walk? Or I walk in?
Hey, there's the revolving door. Let's go talk to him.
Got some great steps in, guys, walking around the gym.
Yeah, all right.
Got half
about
my,
do it.
Half my steps in for the day.
Yeah. Sit down and have something to eat. And
now I'm going to go to the weight room and see if Lou's there. That's what I do.
Let's go to the restaurant, get a burger, and head out.
I just like to avoid the locker rooms because everyone walks around naked, and sometimes you know
why?
Them.
Yeah,
and I
why?
Don't always think that that's the most comfortable conversation to have with people. With friends. It just isn't.
Prominent TV news anchor you see every night just walking around.
Yeah, it's like, hey, how's it going?
Hey. Yep. 5 o'clock news, never going to look the same.
Yeah. No. No.
Yeah,
there was one guy. There was one guy who was a prominent sports anchor for many years in this town who was a legendary member, and he would come up to you and they have these like little like round in the locker area. They have these like little round, they're not benches, but they're like the stools, essentially, that you can either sit on or, mm-hmm. you know, put your stuff on or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he would come and put his one leg up
yep.
on that one stool
Captain
and then sit there
Morgan
and talk
it.
To you.
Ugh.
You know, like one leg and then put his hand
yeah,
with his
Captain
elbow
Morgan.
Out. Yeah,
stance.
The total Captain Morgan.
But just let's be clear. Were you at the lower level?
I would be sitting down.
Be standing?
I'd be sitting down and he'd come over and he'd put the thing up and go, "How you doing, buddy?" And I'm like, "I got a thing. I'm fine.
I got a thing.
You got a thing. I don't want to see it. Oh, God. Oh, God.
Towel off in front of you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Put the talcum powder
actually, in
on.
Some cases, we wouldn't even have it. You know, there was no towel.
No towel.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a whole thing.
Or it's a really tiny towel that's like a glorified hand towel.
Washcloth. That doesn't fit.
It's kind of around the waist,
yes.
but not all the way.
Yeah.
It's all I could find. They're
yeah.
running low.
Yeah. It's I got that going. Yeah.
While standing next to a stack of towels.
I like to air dry.
Yeah. It's a weird deal.
It is a weird deal.
It's a weird deal.
I never understood that.
Seeing coworkers. That's
yeah.
awkward, too.
Yeah. Well, it's okay if they're just kind of in their little area and they're getting dressed and you are. But when they come over, they're walking around fully naked. And
no
then they come
that.
And have conversations with yeah. you. There's something awkward about that to me.
The strangest thing I ever saw there was Jesse Jackson Sr. going to the shower. And he just, and you know, he doesn't move fast, right? He was in his 70s then. I think
sure.
he's in his 80s now, right? And he was, and he's a big guy, right? He was a college athlete.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Didn't he play football at Illinois or something? There's some.
I'll fact check it.
Yeah, something. He goes into the shower. He's got two security guys with him in 3-piece suits. And they literally follow him into the shower.
In their suits?
Yeah. Because, you know, there's like a row of showers and there's like, you know, walls in between the showers. But they're in there. But it's steamy in the whole shower area. And it's wet, and there's, you know, water on the floor. And that's, you know, it's like a gym shower. And they're standing there outside his little, you know, cubicle shower with their hands, you know, clasped in front of their, like, you know, how they in front of them.
Sunglasses on?
Essentially. Fogging up as they're there. And I get it. I get that there's always a security, you know, situation around him. But not there. Not at that joint.
We're going to target him in the showers.
Yeah. They're not going to. No one's getting into East Bank. Hell, the members can barely get into East Bank. and I was just thinking to myself, how hot are these guys in their 3-piece suits? Because it was kind of winter, and it was, you know, and so, but it's real hot inside the shower area. Like, oh man, this really sucks.
Yeah.
And he took long showers. Not that I was sticking around just to find out.
Watching?
Well, because I showered, I walked in after him, saw this, left before him,
uh-huh.
and
still
then
saw
got,
the guys in the suits.
Then got dressed and walked past the shower, and they were still standing there.
So, did you feel safer?
No.
Oh.
No. No. Well, they weren't there to protect me.
Well, you know,
they were going to let anything happen. Oh my God. And what do you do when you have to pull out a soapy gun? What happens? You know, it's going to fall out of your hand.
Like, whoa. Yeah. Don't drop the gun.
So it was, anyway.
Yeah, that's how some people work out. I'm very guilty of that. There's too many distractions at the place where you work out.
Connor Murphy. That's
Connor
how
Murphy,
we started. Yeah.
Right. And how he's in such great shape, but that he truly goes and he truly works out for hours a day.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what he does.
I said, "Hey, you want a beer?" last night. He goes,
testing
no.
him?
Mm. No, I'm afraid it's going to hurt me tomorrow. I'm like, oh my God, that is what I'm okay. I almost cried.
Like,
it was such a pure, honest and responsible thing. I have not seen that in years.
So did you say, how about a vodka? The beer's heavy. I understand.
How could you be in that great a shape that one beer really matters?
I mean, it's just
is
about working out. It's about, yeah. I mean, they have to, they are so lean, right? And that, you know, everything, their body works on such an efficient level. And I have no idea what that means. I couldn't even begin to understand what that would feel like. But he does. And that's all I want. That's what I want because he is one of my heroes.
Heroes.
And we're going to need him this year for the Blackhawks because he's a defenseman, and that's where the biggest problems have been.
Well, and he's a friend of the show, too.
Yeah, right.
He comes in studio and he hangs out with us, and he's a really cool guy.
Yes. But I don't know. When those guys get on the road and they're going to start in Prague, right? Well, going to Berlin first and then Prague.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Actually, that Berlin game mm-hmm. is a crazy game. They're playing a professional team in Berlin, right?
Mm-hmm.
They And then, of course, they're playing the Flyers in Prague.
Right.
But, you know, when they're there, like, they're not going to be drinking on the road. Really? I don't know. Is that really? Is that what goes on?
It's interesting to see that.
That's why I'm not in hockey, I guess.
Different sports, you know. Baseball clubhouse after a game.
Yeah. There's
always people walking around with beers in their hand.
Yeah. Very different.
Very different sports.
Very different. Right. Well, the cardio of hockey is different.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... People are like, well, they're skating. How hard is that? Yeah, you go skate. Gee. And they skate, what, for like on average 3 minutes, right, per line?
That's even pretty long.
No, not even that much, I'd say.
2 minutes per line?
Probably even less than that.
Yeah.
Like a minute, minute and a half?
Yeah.
It's crazy. And people go, what, a minute and a half? What is that? Okay, you try it. You try it.
You're basically sprinting on skates the entire time. And then not to mention the physical aspect of it that's, you know, a big part of it.
Getting hit by
right,
Chara.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or any of the rest of those.
Or fighting for the puck, you know. It's like wrestling at that point.
Okay, you can have it. No, go ahead. I'll get it next time.
You got there first. You take it.
So, yeah. So that's anyway, that was our night last night. So it was very lovely. And you know, the season is drawing to a close. But it's been very, very fun out there. And they are going to be something next year. That everyone can agree.
Totally.
So, mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Is right. All right, let's check in now. Okay, what's coming up? Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on WGN Everywhere.
Hey, Jay Cutler is going to show up at the game on Thursday.
No!
As a fan.
Oh, God.
I'm reading this here.
We won.
Bears, Packers. He's never been a fan. So he and wife, Kristen K-Cav Cavallari, going to be there in the stands to watch it all go down. And
well, he's going to be on the field. I think they're taking...
What?
There are Bears legends who are mounting
the field. He's going to be on the
legends.
Field.
Legends? Mm-mm. I don't think he qualifies as the legend.
He says he's just going as a fan.
No, he's going as a fan.
That's it?
Yeah. Wants to see it.
What?
Wants to see it all happen. Wow, for what he cares.
Does he know that we don't want him to see it?
I don't think he cares. As always. He doesn't care that we don't want him there. Because he just doesn't care.
I'd like
about
to see
anything.
Like the reverse shots of him looking totally disinterested in the game. Or I wonder, is that maybe as a fan, he does look interested in the game.
Smoking Jay.
We're used to that look on his face. Yeah, whatever. You know, whatever happens.
Okay.
So he'll be there. Betty White will be there. She's going to be part of the pregame show festivities.
She's actually going to be. I know she's in a video.
She's actually going to be in it. Going out there. And she's going to be part of the whole pre-show kind of thing. So she'll be part of the... everything that going on beforehand.
Because she's 102, along
she's
with the NFL.
She's almost as old as the NFL. Just about.
So that's...
A little shy.
That's why they're doing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and
I'm just trying to work it in my head. I just want to know.
Brett Favre will be out there.
Okay.
Aww. And the Betty White. And you'll have Rob Schmeigel.
Smigel.
I like to say it, Schmeigel. Yeah. But he's a super fan. You know, George
Friend
Wentz
of the show, as
segment.
You remember. We did the show with him. And,
he's great.
In April.
And they will take a tongue-in-cheek look at the double doink.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. That's not bad for us.
Now, I thought that was all the TV thing.
Yeah, that's out there. They're going to have a live experience at Grant Park, and they're going to do everything. They're going to do it all before the game. It's a big deal.
Huh.
100th season for the NFL. It's a big celebration.
So I'm assuming that Triumph is going to be with... Oh, no, I guess it wouldn't be. It would be him as a super fan. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They already released a promo, him and
George Wendt.
George Wendt, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
With a little Chicago Bear teddy bear, and when you squeeze it, it's a double doink.
What? Oh, no. I know. I don't like... We shouldn't have too much fun with it. Starting a new season.
Who would do that to America?
Yeah, isn't that bad?
A really smart Packer fan?
Forget America, Chicago. I think everyone else will find it funny. For the rest of us, we'll be cringing.
Yeah, that won't be funny.
Oh, God.
You got to talk to Rob. Call him.
Oh, God.
Give him a call. Let him know. We're not okay with that.
Here's what do we have here that we're going to...
Mm-hmm.
Here's the Chris Collinsworth promo for this.
Get a load of this disgusting item.
What's the matter with that? It appears to be an adorable bear sticker doll.
They sell them in Green Bay. Give it a squeeze.
Double doink.
The Bears season's going to end on a double doink.
Too soon.
Oh. Ouch. That is brutal.
It's haunting. Not funny. I'll take one of those.
How are they going to... You know what? Turn the microphone off. Turn the microphone off. Turn the microphone off. I don't know how they're going to put those guys out there live and have that be entertaining. I'd see it like in a video, like what they just did, what that was.
It's a bit.
It'll probably be a combo of both.
That's the worst, though. Because then, you know, in front of 60,000 people who really don't care about any of this, you know, they're like, hey, come on, let's go. I have the game. And everybody's going to be, you know, imagine how intoxicated that stadium is going to be
at the beginning, you think?
Oh my god, people are taking the day off,
huh?
Yeah, man,
this. Have you been to a 3 o'clock Sunday start?
I have,
yeah. That literally, if you light a lighter, the entire stadium would go up in flames. It is so drunk.
That is one thing Packers fans and Bears fans have in common.
Yes.
A lot of drinking going on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So now it's just going to be double.
Right.
Equally as bad.
Yeah. Now, it is a Thursday, so there will be a little bit of a, you know, like if this were a Sunday night game, look out. Thursday, there are some people who will be coming from work.
That's right. That's what I would think on a Thursday.
But there will still be tailgating. People will be taking the day off because, you know, if you're lucky enough to get a ticket for this, you don't have to show up for work. Right?
You just call in your boss. Say, hey.
Yeah, or you are the boss, right? And you're like, I'm going. Because this is not, you know, these are not inexpensive tickets anymore.
They are not.
So it's, and then the tailgating and then the very special fan thing, the fan experience in Grant Park, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it down Hutchinson Field, wherever that is?
Right.
It's going to be something.
It is. Now, what are the rules of etiquette when you wear a giant cheese on your head? Don't you have to take that off when you're in the seats?
No, that's going to get taken off.
Yeah.
No, that's coming off. Uh-huh. No, that's coming off. Actually.
Only for the Star Spangled Banner.
Do you have to, because it's cheese, it's not a hat, technically. Do you have to take that off during the national anthem?
Don't you say, here in Green Bay, they say, please remove your hats and your cheese heads.
They do.
I have to say, though, that generally, the Packers fans and Bears fans, I know there's this like intense rivalry, but having been to games in both places, people are pretty nice to each other.
Yeah,
during
that's true. Haven't been to Green Bay, but I've been to many Packer games here. Yeah, people are.
Yeah.
I found they're nice during the games, and then it's after when everybody's walking back and they're drunk, and one team's ticked off because they lost.
That's true. It's never good. That's why I run away like a little girl. And that, by the way, is an insult to little girls. The way that I run away from the games.
Kind of was.
After that. Yeah. All right.
Well, it's going to be huge. It's going to be exciting. I know we got a preseason game to get through tonight, but still. Next week. Big.
Okay.
And Jay Cutler will be there. Bro. So you can look for him. Might be near you. In the fancy seats.
I don't think so. I think that Jay, they're going to get Jay. Jay's got to go up into a skybox.
You think?
Oh, yeah.
There's no way.
He's not safe elsewhere.
Right, exactly. A. B, you think K-Cav is going to sit there, like, in seats?
And pay attention to the game? No.
No.
No. That's true.
She's a big star.
Sure.
No. No, she's going to be in the fancy suite with the cracked crab. All right, let's talk to just heard the president, I think you just heard, the president has canceled his trip to Poland.
Yeah, right, because of the threat of Dorian.
He was not so concerned about the threat of Dorian when it was about to destroy Puerto Rico, though. Then he was like, when can I get to Poland? And now it's sort of like, it's about to hit Mar-a-Lago, and he's like, all right, I'm staying. I can't go anywhere. I appreciate that he is. I mean, I'm not... The thing is that it's one of those things where you get criticized one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But I firmly believe, because I have done this, I firmly believe he didn't want to go, and he's using any excuse.
He doesn't want to go to Poland.
He doesn't want to go to Poland. He doesn't want to go anywhere, right? I mean, that whole thing where he got in the fight and he didn't want to go to Denmark because he hates to fly. Like, internationally. He doesn't want to, it's not so much the plane. I think he likes the plane. He loves flying around in planes. But I think he just doesn't like to go other places, and then he's eating food he doesn't know, and he's got, you know, it's not his bathroom, and, you know, it's all those things. It's just, you know, it's like, I don't see him sleep as well. He doesn't even like the White House, for that matter.
The step down.
He can't wait to get back to Trump Tower.
He's sending Mike Pence in his place, so he gets to go to Poland.
It is Mike Pence's greatest honor.
He'll be honored to be there.
Honored to be representing the president in Poland. He will make that point the minute he lands. And then Poland, didn't they just elect some crackpot too? That'd be like a perfect, that would be, Pence could ask if he could be a vice president there. He's vice president to crackpots. I don't know.
Interesting news.
The good news is there will not be an international incident. Right? And let's hope that whatever happens here with this hurricane, because it is making the turn, heading right toward America's Wang.
Is it going to be anywhere near Fort Lauderdale?
Yes, it's going to hit basically the center of Florida.
Ironically, there's another Trump campaign announcement today about how he's going to be flying re-election banners soliciting your phone numbers for his as supporters over beaches on Labor Day. And so one of the places is Milwaukee.
You can't make it up.
One is in Cleveland, Virginia Beach, Virginia, Detroit, Erie, and then Fort Lauderdale.
Hey, give me those digits. Is that what it says? I wonder what the banner says.
I don't know. I think it says Trump, thanks for our great American workers is what they have in this.
On Labor Day.
Okay. Labor Day. And then kind of soliciting your phone number to join the list of supporters. But having it over Fort Lauderdale if there's a hurricane?
Fine.
I would say no.
So he's canceling his trip to Poland, but they are still flying a plane over Fort Lauderdale. It's going to hit right now the center of the cone.
Uh-huh.
Of variability is north of Fort Lauderdale, but it would be coming in somewhere between the Space Coast and Palm Beach is kind of where it's going to come in. So right in the center of the, if you look at the state of Florida, or as Homer Simpson did call it, America's Wang, if you look right in the middle of that, it just goes, it's that's where the center of the cone is. Could go as far south as Fort Lauderdale.
Uh-huh.
It's not really going to be as far south as Miami. Or it could go as far north as Jacksonville.
Right.
So, but then again, we're 4 days out from this, I think?
Labor Day it's supposed to hit, yeah. So,
at 4 days out, you would, it could make a turn. These storms do have, they come in from this direction, I'm told. I just learned this by watching TV. Everything I know, I learned from watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's very...
Tom Skilling.
Also, it's the way everybody does it now. That these storms have a tendency, when they come in from this direction, they can get bumped and then get caught in the jet stream and then move to the north and then back out to the east and become fish storms, as they're called.
Mm-hmm.
That's very exciting when they're a fish storm. We prefer that.
We do prefer that than making landfall.
Yeah, but the fish don't.
Yeah, they're in the water. They're always going to be in the water. They're in the water. They get sucked up into the storm. They're in the water. They don't care. Never asked a fish about it. Now, here's the other part of this, though, is that if this thing does take this track, because this track has been a track that has gone the other way, which where it does go, you know, through or under Florida, then it goes out into the Gulf.
Mm.
And it rolls around in the Gulf, picks up steam again, and then barrels up north, either into somewhere along the Gulf Coast. And you think about that for a second. That's like the double hit from a single hurricane. Mm. Katrina was that. You know, Katrina skirted Florida and then went up, did some damage, and then obviously did what it did. So... All right. So
the president's staying put. He's not leaving. He's not going to Poland. He'll be, I guess, monitoring the situation in Florida from D.C. But it does look as if it could do some damage the way it's situated right now.
Let me ask you this question. Is he going to stay in D.C.? Is he going to go up to the golf resort up in New Jersey and monitor it from there?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't think
he
didn't mention that in the press release.
No,
that said he's
staying,
canceling the Poland trip.
Right, he's canceling the Poland trip. My guess is that he goes to New Jersey.
You might be right.
So if he goes to New Jersey, is that as good as staying in Washington to monitor the situation? Of course, his press operation will say, well, it's, you know, he's as aware anywhere as he possibly could be because he's the president. They'll keep him completely updated on everything.
He had already canceled the second leg of that trip, remember, Denmark.
Right.
After his desire to purchase Greenland was mocked.
Right. So this way, this is a good excuse to cancel the whole thing because he didn't want to. He just got back from Europe. He did. Why do I have to go back? They were talking about that before the Europe trip. Before the G7, they were saying he's been grousing about, he didn't want to go to the G7, didn't want to go to this. Again, it's because it's not his bathroom. I get it.
His bathroom.
I totally understand this issue. It's like, oh, God, I guess I'm not going to eat that stuff. He's getting a little panicky about what it's going to be. Oh, I know. You know, I mean, Air Force One doesn't bother him.
He likes that.
He likes that. And he likes flying on his own plane. It's not about the flying part. It's either landing. It's at different times, and you're tired. You can't sleep. You're like, oh, my God, what are we? And then they're dragging you around doing all this. You got to meet a bunch of people you don't want to meet. I'm old and I'm rich. What do I need this for is what he's thinking to himself. And I got to go to the bathroom. What if I have to go to the bathroom? That's a question a lot of people ask themselves when they're in a situation like that. What if I have to go to the bathroom?
He stays in the nicest of the hotels when he visits Europe. Why is the bathroom such a problem?
Because it's not his. And then he can't stay just in the hotel room. They're asking him to go out and do things. And what if he's out doing something? He has to go to the bathroom. Like in his own resort, so he knows where the bathrooms are. Right? And he can stop. And, have you noticed there are no pictures of him playing golf?
You're
right. Right? When all these other presidents were playing golf, you always saw pictures of him.
Yeah, you did. Right.
He does not allow anybody near him when he is on his own properties. Because he can control the perimeter of his properties. And that's what they do. And they keep everybody miles away, press miles away, so we never know when he's playing golf, when he's not playing golf.
He's very critical of Obama, remember, for
his
golf trips.
Yes, exactly. So that would be...
bad optics.
Although he's shameless and he doesn't really care about those types of arguments, it is what it is, and he's going to be what he's going to be. I'm telling you, though. It is as simple as that. What if I have to go to the bathroom?
Doesn't Kim Jong-un travel with like this own pop-up toilet
or
something?
Yes, he does.
Yeah, so.
He has his own toilet?
Yep. Yeah. That's why Trump loves him so much.
Right, because he's a great idea.
He's asking the U.S. military to develop him his own toilet the way that Kim Jong-un did.
His own gold-plated porta-potty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear. That's worse than I thought.
Well, there could be a toilet bomb.
A what?
A toilet bomb.
A bomb that would explode and kill him from inside a toilet?
Yes.
Classic cherry bomb in the porta potty.
Is that a thing?
That is a thing.
Hmm.
Well, I think it's more like a prank.
So it's a security thing rather than like a hygiene.
Sure. No, it's all it's a hygiene nuttiness is what it is. there are no two ways around that. That's all it is. Oh my God, what if I have to go?
Well, he doesn't have to worry about that now because he'll be
monitoring the situation.
Monitoring the situation.
Yes, from the 17th green. At Bedminster, whatever it's called up there.
Yeah, Bedminster, isn't it?
Yep.
Don't they have a wine up there, too? That was part of the kind of...
His wines are in Virginia.
Oh, Virginia.
That's where his winery is. But then he's got the whatever the thing in New Jersey is where, you know, Trump International. And then he we'll be back down to a season for Florida. That'll be the next thing, as long as Mar-a-Lago is still there. I'm just wondering... I would like for our evangelical friends... just to weigh in on this, if this hurricane barrels into the dirty side goes into Mar-a-Lago, mm-hmm. and then the clean side goes into Doral.
Oh gosh!
Can we believe that this is an act of God? Oh, I'm going to ask for a definition of that.
Right after he pushed for the Doral to be the location of the next G7
mm-hmm.
summit. Ooh,
yeah,
that would be weird.
Just saying that if this thing kind of whips, if it somehow takes them both out, like a 7-10 split, sort of like that, if that were to occur, I just want to know, will there be some wacky televangelist who will get on television and tell us that this was an act of God and we're just going to have to move along?
Oh, boy. Be strange.
Yeah.
But I hope people are okay because, yeah,
Yes.
I have a feeling that these forecasts tend to be pretty dramatic 4 days out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, about, you know, what the strength is going to be. We've been very lucky. Not since, essentially, well, there have been two, really, but Katrina is the best example of this. This is one where there wasn't an anticipation that it was going to just cycle up right at the end when it was going in. And it did. And it lingered, then slowed down and lingered and just churned over between Biloxi and New Orleans. And that was what created all the trouble in the world. And also the infrastructure of New Orleans specifically. And then you have, you know, that part of Florida. I mean, you know, Florida, the one nice thing about Florida, the grapefruits, as I told you about, you know, from when I was a kid. But the, you know, the building code, all that stuff along the coast, the East Coast and the West Coast, that's all relatively new. And that's all built to very, very specific code.
Right. They've changed it over the years.
Right.
To sustain more the higher winds and the destruction of tropical storms, for sure.
And you have to have storm windows, or you have to have up to 180 mile an hour wind proof windows. I mean, they're kind of prepared for this. So let's just hope that, you know, people are able to get out. And there's good evacuation routes to get out of Florida. And people should probably start to think about that now.
Right. Labor Day weekend. Gee.
But you just never know. But I don't know where you go, because this thing could turn north or south, and then you drive your way into the hurricane as opposed to driving yourself away from the hurricane.
Yeah.
All I know is I'm totally hurricane prepared here.
You are? Your house is here?
I am totally hurricane prepared here.
Just in case.
I got the canned goods. I've got a... I don't have an actual generator, but I have an exercise bike that I plugged into my wall. And if I pedal it enough, I might be able to get my TV to work.
Do you have like a safe room that you can lock yourself in?
I do indeed have a safe.
Well,
as some will know, I actually do have one of those. So I have that, and I got the special toilet. So I know my toilet situation.
You do know you need water, not liquor, kind of stacked up in there.
Liquor's fine.
Does liquor get you through it? How long can you last?
I'm sure
on
that
liquor
will
alone,
help, but.
But wait, how long can I last? I'm like 30 years so far and counting.
You should do it. Yeah, you should be okay with that.
We were at the game last night, and Lauren turned to me. We were some of Lauren's family was there, and we, you know, we're Connor Murphy and all those people.
Mm-hmm.
And Lauren turned to me. She goes, "You don't look very good."
You didn't.
And was it, you don't look very good because...
Well, I wasn't really. I guess it was the night before. Maybe I had just been out a little late.
You were bitten.
And I had not properly watered myself.
Hydrated.
And right. And she's like, "When's the last time you had water?" And I looked at I looked at the beer in my hand, and she goes, "Oh."
It's been a while, huh?
I think you should go home. I go,
"Is that
okay.
what you said?"
Yes.
And he did. He was like, "All right, I'm out of here."
Yeah.
Lauren saw it.
Yeah.
She knows.
So.
It was good advice, actually.
Yeah.
I turned to the family. I was like, "Sorry about him. God, this is so embarrassing."
what's wrong with
him? You're embarrassing the millennial?
Yeah. Yeah. It was other millennials, though. I think that it was all part of the thing.
Uh-huh.
All right, let's do this. Let's check down here for a minute, find out what Kim's doing at the top of the hour. And then we're going to get ready for the radio broadcast, which is going to commence here in just a few minutes. And we've got a top 5 at 5 coming your way. Stay tuned for this. And you also are going to hear from Tamon Bradley from Channel 9 talking about the big speech that Lori Lightfoot is going to be giving at 6 o'clock tonight. We will carry that live and have reaction to how we are about to get screwed. All of that coming for Kim. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on 720 WGN in just a few minutes, but WGN everywhere right now. And we're getting ready. Do we have a time that we're going to be coming back here, do we think? Approximately at 5 p.m., I'm being told.
Oh.
That's what time this flight is going to land.
Time for the top 5 at 5.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect.
We'll wait for that to start the news and all the rest of the things that are fit to print on the program. Also coming up, we will take you live to the Harold Washington Library, where Lori Lightfoot is going to be delivering her State of the City address.
Yeah, should be interesting for sure. I mean, there's hints of it that have come out already, talking about how the projections that we heard already from the prior administration about what the budget shortfall were not big enough, and that really when she's looking at the true numbers, we have a bigger hole to fill. And then the only thing I've heard so far is we're going to freeze new hiring. There've been some talk about some, you know, real estate transfer taxes, but even the things that have come out so far don't add up to anywhere near what you need to get to put together the number to fill that kind of budget hole. So it'll be interesting to see how thorough she is in the analysis, and will we know where $1 billion worth of budget shortfall comes from? Or will it just be a little bit more about giving us the talk about expect some pain, but we can do this, we'll get through this, it's something we'll figure out without putting too much of a burden on people who can least afford it.
Willie Wilson's already called a press conference for tomorrow to react to this.
Oh. Not like here.
Raising taxes is not the way, his press release says.
Well, we don't know if that's what she's going to say.
I know, but it's just, okay. Everyone's just ready for this.
Right. What, you think right. It's going to be a real estate taxes? Because she's backed away from that in every interview.
It's going to be a transfer tax. It's going to be a transfer tax on high-end real estate, which is going to further depress an already depressed sector of the real estate economy here. So there you go. That's what's going to happen. And the idea that, and it, you know, there is not a lot of sympathy for people who live downtown, right? Because they live downtown. They must have great lives if they live downtown. But there are a lot of people. I grew up, as I always like to say, in the mean streets of Streeterville.
Mm-hmm.
In an apartment that was, when we first moved into it, $250 a month.
Yeah, no, it's true. I mean, you had Alderman Riley come on the show to say there are a lot of people who are house rich and otherwise, you know, living in a very middle class or lower type of salary. And that's just the way it is. I have a friend who's a kindergarten teacher, and she is single, and she lives in Gold Coast in a nice place that she bought 15 years ago, and it has appreciated. I don't know if it would get to that number, but I think if she were to sell it, I think she might get hit with it.
My number was $250 a month in rent, right? So
sure,
it's now worth, you know, that same apartment, I would imagine would be worth maybe $700,000, something like that.
Okay.
And maybe a little less, I don't know. But whatever it is, the people who bought it when that thing converted from a rental to a condo was, I think it was maybe $150,000.
Wow.
And so it'd be worth three or four times that.
Right.
And so now what do you do? And you're not, and it wasn't, you know, you paid it off, and you pay your real estate taxes, which go up every year. And these are people who were, you know, these are people who are, you know, these are not rich people. These are people who have middle class jobs.
Right. Right. And incomes that, you know, you just don't have an extra couple $1,000 a year to sort of pay more taxes on top of what you've already paid.
And there's tens of thousands of them, because these are not neighborhoods that are spread out horizontally. They're spread out vertically.
Right. But they'd only pay when they sell. I don't know if that makes... I think it makes a difference based on... sell it. When you sell, that's a part of what gets taken out rather than
annually. But if your property taxes keep going up, they have to sell. That's the problem that a lot of people, especially the older people who are living there and on fixed incomes, and there's a ton of them, and they can no longer are working, so they're living off of whatever their pension is or their Social Security plus whatever they've got saved up. And then when that starts to run, then they sell, and then then the money that they thought they were going to get, they're not going to get.
Which is why, though, she said she doesn't think she can dip into raising real estate taxes again, because the pain that people are already feeling in that department.
Right.
And you've talked about this before, the fact that those deductions have gone away on a federal level, so you don't have that offset, so you've been doubly hit if you're in that category.
Right. So you got that problem.
You got that problem. You got a lot of problems.
Yes, I get all kinds of problems. What if I have to go to the bathroom? That's another problem. All right, so we're going to have the top 5 and 5. We will have Tamon Bradley give us a little preview of what Lori Lightfoot is going to say. And then we'll have your reaction to what she says afterwards. And also a Chicago alderman will be joining us for that. And you as well.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. That's how you do it. That is basically what this show is all about. It's all about serving the best interests of you. And when I say you, I mean me.
That's what I thought you meant.
That's what I meant.
It's all about you.
Right. Well, I guess it always has been. And where has that gotten us? Really? If you want to stop and think about it, it really hasn't gotten us anywhere. All right. So I'm going to produce the show on the internet. I love it. The people on the internet love when I do this. And so just just tell me when it is, and I hit the theme, and then we go from there. Right. All right. And where do we think we are now? How far away are we right now? We're about 15 seconds away.
15 seconds.
I like this. Any last thoughts?
Well, I do have a last thought. I think the mayor is down 8% in her approval ratings from when she first took office, and it'll be interesting to see if this speech makes people hate her more or love her more, or maybe neither one.
Although she came in winning by 72-26 or whatever it was.
Still pretty high, yeah.
And then almost. A bunch of people wrote themselves in, like myself.
It's all about you. It is all about you.
It's true. Stand by, please. Welcome aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on 720 WGN. Mm-hmm. WGN everywhere for those who've been listening on the World Wide Web as we have continued on here. A lot of things were happening.
Lots.
A lot of things are going to happen. And probably most importantly, coming up in the 6 o'clock hour, we are going to take you live to the Harold Washington Library, where Lori Lightfoot will be giving her State of the City address.
Yeah, she will. And it's a big night for Chicago because you got to listen to the mayor and hear what her suggestions are for how you fix a $1 billion budget shortfall on top of the increase in taxes. I think we're all well aware of the increases that we've paid over the last few years. So here we go.
So before we do any of that, let us now check in with Kim Gordon. She's got... All right, here we go. It's time for your top 5 at 5.
Nice.
And I've read ahead.
Okay. Are you feeling good about it?
It is up to my standards.
Okay.
Let's put it that way.
You have very high standards.
So here we go.
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show. Let's go.
3, 2, 1. Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Number 5.
Concerned that pregnant women and young people might have ill effects from marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
The Surgeon General, that was Trump's podiatrist, right? That became the Surgeon General. Who was that?
Really?
Dr. Jerome Adams. Something
was
like
he
that.
A TV doc? I don't know.
Yeah, I was right. He was the guy from Botched. He sounded a national alarm about the drug's harmful effects on the developing brain. Adams says that science shows that marijuana has gotten stronger. Well, I don't think we needed science to tell us that.
We can just ask you, Ro.
I think we know. That's what happened. Especially the stuff you buy legally.
Yeah.
Look out.
How about it?
There's a whole other thing going on there. And with a threefold increase in the concentration of THC, that could mean danger Will Robinson for some people.
Most of marijuana's documented harms has increased 3 to 5-fold over the last few decades. And that's before you take into account concentrated forms such as edibles, oils, and waxes that can increase THC delivery even further by as much as an additional 3-fold. Or as I like to say, this ain't your mother's marijuana.
And that became the headline that, hey, it really has changed over the years and got to be careful with it.
Does Donald Trump know that's the Surgeon General?
Why do you say that?
I know, you know why I say it.
Because he's African-American?
Yeah. And his name is Jerome.
And you use the word ain't.
Right. You're wondering, wait a second, who named him? All right, well, let me just say this. That I think we all, and this has not happened to me, but this has happened to friends of mine, that, people who grew up in the 70s and 80s and were like, I remember what ditchweed was, and they were in high school or whatever it was they were smoking. And then they decided in their 40s that they were going to take the edibles for the first time.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to try it with my kids. It'll be fun.
And the edible is a totally different animal. You take it, and then like 30 minutes later, nothing's happened. Well, I think I'll take another one. And then 15 minutes after that, they're trying to dial 911 on their banana peel.
Oh, gee. Watch out.
Hello.
But that is the problem, right? It's the anxiety goes up when you have too much.
Right.
I would think.
Yes. Well, that can, yes. Yeah, you can have palpitations. Depends on, I mean, some people, THC acts differently in different people. For me, it creates anxiety and not a very pleasant situation. But they claim that they can fix that. They can dial that in with all these new marijuana stores.
You go to just give you more CBD.
Right. They go to the genius at the marijuana store and they go, hey, this is what we're going to do. And that's what, and they dial it in. I don't know if anybody even knows any of that stuff. I think they're just making that stuff up.
It's going to be interesting, the rollout here. January 1st, 2020.
All right. Checking in at
number four.
Fox and Friends host Brian Kilmeade has a radio show.
Mm-hmm.
So he had the president on today to talk about the president's criticism of the Fox News Channel. And he was mad at the Fox News Channel because what they did is they put on the DNC communications director, which the president thought was an act, first of all, was a treasonous act against him. And it was heavily promoting the Democrats, and how dare they do that?
Tens of millions that follow me. And the polls are phony, too. Now, the polls are phony, too. I mean, well, in all fairness, among my worst polls always is Fox. I have to say that. But I have the worst.
I know you.
I'm not happy with Fox. I think, you know, people think Fox is for me. Fox is good. Look, Sean and Laura and Tucker has really been very good for, well, Tucker's a little tricky, but that's okay. But he's been very good. And, you know, many of them, you guys in the morning are Ainsley and Steve, and you were a solid, I used to say you were a solid six, maybe a seven, but you're getting much better.
He's grading them based on how
loyal they are to him.
Preferable the treatment is.
Oh, my God.
What's bothering you about it? Because our channel prides itself on diversity and getting everybody in so you don't have to flip around.
Let me just tell you what about it. CNN is 100%. They would never. In fact, they just fired Steve Cortez, a phenomenal guy. They fired Jeff. They have virtually Jeff nobody. They have panels where they have panels that all Trump haters on. You know, Jeff Zucker is just, I mean, give me a break. I could tell you stories about him, Jeff Zucker.
And I'll bet Jeff could tell stories about you, too. That's going to be my guess.
So, goes both ways.
Yeah, so I don't know if I want to go there.
But they don't have diversity, meaning my view. They never put my view on. Although I guarantee you this, they have both, but CNN in particular is begging me to do an interview. And I just think it would be disloyal to my followers. What are they going to ask me?
I don't think you should do an interview over there either.
No, I think it would be very disloyal to people that are Trump fans and people that voted for me and people that are going to vote again. And by the way, I see these phony polls. We have very strong polls in-house, but I see these phony polls. That's another form of fake news. You know, it's called suppression. They suppress the feelings.
Britt Hume tweeted out, Fox News doesn't work for you. It's not supposed to work for you. So you may like people, you may not, but we don't work for you.
I would just like to remind everybody, that's the President of the United States right there. All right, Top 5-5 continues. We've worked our way to
number three.
In Alabama, the governor there is Kay Ivey, and she has just had to issue an apology because she appeared in a racist sketch during her undergraduate years at Auburn University in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that everybody appeared in a racist sketch during the 1960s at Auburn University. That was how you got admitted. Anybody here want to sing Mammy? All right, here we go. Audio has surfursed of a 1967 interview given by Ivy and her then-fiancé, Ben LaRavia, in which LaRavia recalled a party at Auburn's Baptist Student Union. Ivy participated in at least one sketch at the party where LaRavia said she was donned in blackface.
As I look at my fiance across the room, I can see her that night. She had on a pair of blue coveralls, and she had put some black paint all over her face, and she was, we were acting out this skit called Cigar Butts, such as crawling around on the floor looking for cigar butts and things like this, which certainly got a big reaction out of the audience.
Would you like to defend yourself from this low position that he's placed you in now?
Well, that was just my role for the evening.
Who else was it out there that it might
I have
been
no there? Idea, but Dean Forrest got a double.
Oh, wow.
Let's make her the Secretary of the Army. Wait, what do I have? What's open right now? Everything? All right. Okay.
There were also photos from her yearbook that surfaced with her sorority sisters donning blackface, to your point that probably this was, you know, more prevalent than you would like to believe, but it was, you know, well, there were other pictures. She was not pictured, and there's no video of this. There's just people retelling it.
Just imagine the people laughing as she's in blackface, crawling around on the floor looking for cigarette butts. Cigar butts. That was some high-end quality comedy back then. Well, here's her apology.
My fellow Alabamians, I offer my heartfelt apologies for my participation in something from 52 years ago that I find deeply regrettable. I will do all I can going forward to help show the nation that the Alabama of today is a far cry from the Alabama of the 1960s. We have come a long way. I am proud to serve each and every one of you, and I love this state we all call home.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, you still have the Virginia governor who wasn't sure if he was the guy in blackface or in the Klan hood. Remember that one? And he's still the governor. But right. That's
well, she's going to be the governor.
Yeah, no,
trust me, no one's replacing her as governor
fine.
In Alabama.
It's all good.
Yeah, that's going to go. Hey, did you see that Trump announced his Alabama committee for reelection? And Jeff Sessions is not on it.
Who is on it? Is there anybody to mention?
Well, if Jeff Sessions had just thrown a Christmas party at the Trump International Hotel, this would not have happened. It would have been all right. All right, checking in at
number two.
In Port Orange, Florida, a teacher who was caught on camera mowing his lawn naked is fighting to get his job back. Brian Wheeler was demoted to a non-teaching position after he was recorded by a neighbor.
How's it hanging, neighbor? The actual lawnmower went with my joke. It was perfect. It started going down.
Wheeler was charged with exposure of sexual organs and disorderly conduct. The exposure charge was dropped and the disorderly conduct dismissed in a deferred prosecution agreement. Oh. Is Kim Fox the district attorney down there, too?
Nonviolent, there's no crime.
Yeah, Wheeler was not convicted of a crime, but Volusia County United Educators President Elizabeth Albert said he should get his job back.
This is a man who has over two decades of history teaching children in our community and successfully teaching them, which would infer that they feel that he is still of the caliber that is able to work with our kids and teach.
Okay. Kevin and I have a comment on this.
Okay.
If you've ever been on a lawnmower, and I have to admit, as a dazzling urbanite, I don't spend a whole lot of time on lawnmowers, but I have been on them. There are big blades underneath there, right? Things are flying around. There's a thing. There's stuff going on.
Do we know it was a riding mower?
Was it a ride? Yeah, right on.
It was a push mower.
Okay.
Even worse.
Right, because stuff flies up.
Yeah.
You get grass in your mouth.
Yeah.
Girl out of the suburbs did a lot of lawn cutting.
First of all, you want to sit naked? Is it sweaty and naked on your lawnmower? That's gonna make that lawnmower very funky. That's all I'm gonna say.
You get a rash.
There's not enough Armor All wipes to be able to handle that situation.
In Florida, the humidity.
Yeah. Oh boy. Honey, call the 911. I am stuck through my keister. Tear the lawnmower.
Oh, horrible.
But that's a second. Secondary issue.
It's a judgment issue, really, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't that what we're talking about here?
Yes.
What does that?
That is exactly what it is. It is a judgment issue. I mean, it was hot, but that does not. I'm sorry.
I mean, also, Was this in his front yard, his backyard?
There's video of it. You can see.
But what is, like, is his like, what if his backyard is perfect? Like, it is completely blocked off, and some nosy neighbor was, like, putting the camera through the bushes. Then it's like, well, give him a break. You know, you're the one snooping on him. But if he's got this wide open backyard with neighbors right on top of each other, either way, I'm against it. But there's more to this story.
The houses are close together.
Okay.
And the lawn doesn't look like it's been mowed in a while, frankly.
Oh, well, God. I can't do it now because he's got to put pants on.
That's the worst.
Who wants to mow in their pants?
You got the neighbor who doesn't maintain his lawn. Just roots makes everybody look bad.
It looks like a fairly unkept lawn. One of those situations.
Never mind. I'm not even going to touch that one.
Don't go there.
Touch what?
You know, there does need to be some manscaping there along the lawn. Right? No?
Mine would have been better.
Yeah, I kind of know where you're going there. But he's, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe this is one of those things where the neighbors are trying to get after each other. Is that it? You know, how neighbors go crazy like that? Didn't we just have that?
Guy was naked. Guy was naked mowing his lawn and he's a teacher. Yeah, that's the kind of person.
Maybe he's trying to get mad. He's trying to get at his neighbor because they don't like each other.
Okay, well then
that's what he does.
Put some pants on when you mow the lawn.
He did it to tick off his neighbor. That's actually kind of funny.
All right.
Wasn't there a congressman who got in a fight with his neighbor over his lawn?
Oh, that was Senator.
Yeah,
Rand Paul.
Senator Rand Paul. Yeah, remember?
Right.
They got into it over.
Well, Rand
lawn.
Paul had to have surgery. He said, as a result of that. Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
This happens.
That's what happened.
People
yeah.
like to do this.
Because people
neighbors.
Want to punch Rand Paul because of his lawn. That's why.
Number one.
A North Carolina police officer had a little fun with a telephone con artist who was trying to threaten her with arrest over phony bank fraud and money laundering charges. So there was a video posted to the agency's Facebook. Captain Ann Stevens with Apex Police Department. Apex, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
That's not like a private police department. It sounds like a corporate thing. Humored the man's attempts to obtain her address and personal information before delivering a warning to viewers that the caller purports to be an officer named John Black with the Social Security Administration. It didn't go so well for the fake John Black.
You need to cooperate with me because I have your file in front of me and there are several allegations under your name.
Okay, well, what kind of allegations are against my name?
Before proceeding further, I would like to notify you. Law enforcement agencies have found 25 fraudulent bank accounts opened and used fraudulently using your social security number to commit a fraud of more than $10 million.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, people fall for this, though.
Yeah, they do all the time. And maybe not. They're not always just using those numbers that are, you know, maybe less believable. But she's trying to prove a point here, and I think she did.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to just speak to your supervisor now, please.
Your call has been transferred to the senior investigation officer. My name is Officer Jason Brown. If you do not tell me how many bank accounts you have, we'll go ahead and suspend all the bank accounts which are connected to your social security. Do not blame us if you lose any money. Right now, there are two criminal charges against you. Number one, drug trafficking. And number two, money laundering.
Well, that's better than the 25 the first guy told me were out against me.
Oh.
And they've hung up on me.
Having a little fun with the scam artist.
Oh, that's the best.
Turns it into a public service.
Yes, there you go.
It works out.
There you go. All right, let's close it up.
The top five at five.
It's a Rokon show with Anna DeVlantis.
Yep.
720 WGN. Yes, it's a big night. Lori Lightfoot is about to take to the stage and tell us about how badly we're going to get screwed.
State of the city, she said. Consider it's more like a state of the city address. And yes, you're screwed, but we're going to share in the sacrifice to get out of this. And here's how. Although it sounds, maybe Kim's reporting and a lot of other, what we've heard is that she's not going to go too deep into the weeds on specifics tonight. More about, hey.
All right. So this is Grandma's on the roof. That's what happened here. Never tell the grandkids that Grandma died. You start with Grandma. There were leaves on the roof. Grandma got on the roof. She wanted to clean the leaves. Oh, and Grandma fell off the roof. and they had to take her to the hospital. And grandma was very sick, and she died. That's how they got it. She's trying to set us up here,
but
right?
I don't know if it's her setup. I mean, this is, remember, she's only been mayor for 100 days, right? That she took a look at the numbers, and she said, wow, this isn't exactly how it was said to me. This isn't exactly how it was presented.
Fine.
It's a little different.
I'm not saying this is her fault. She was a citizen until just, I mean, this would be as much her fault as it's my fault or your fault. It's not her fault. But it's the way by which she delivers this, she will be judged. That's how it's going to go, because she's got to deliver bad news. And, if you know, for somebody who delivers a lot of bad news, I know how that feels.
It doesn't make you necessarily very popular.
No, it doesn't. Tamon Bradley from WGN-TV News is here with us, and we're getting all ready for this. Tamon, what are you hearing about details here? Are we not going to get a lot?
Yeah, she really has lowered expectations over the past 48 hours. Originally, we thought that she would give us the exact details of really the painful tax hikes that she would be asking the city council to approve. We know from some excerpts of her remarks that were just sent around that just got, she's going to say that we have some hard choices to make, but I don't think she's going to get into the specifics in terms of raising property taxes or tax on real estate high-end real estate transactions, things of that nature that we maybe thought, a tax on professional services, lawyers and accountants. I think she may mention those as ideas, but she's not going to say that that's something that she's ready to implement at this point. That's a real surprise. She's been doing, Mayor Lightfoot has been doing briefings with aldermen all week, and they say she's not showing her hand.
When she took over, there were stories out there being floated that said, hey, the financial picture that my predecessor portrayed is not how it is, and it's much worse. Do you think they'll be blaming in the speech, or do you think she'll mention Mayor Emanuel by name? Do you think there'll be any of that, sort of a look back of how we got to where we are now?
I'm not sure. I do expect there will be a little bit of a look back, because one of the things that she started doing even before she took office was to say that the city, that regular people have not even begun to intellectualize and internalize just how big the deficit is, just how big these problems are. So I do expect in the beginning of her remarks, there will be a little bit of look back, a little bit of, you know, previous administration sort of kicked the can down the road, and this is what we're left with, and now there are some hard choices. But again, what's striking is over the past 48 hours, the mayor has gone out of her way to sort of say she's not going to go over the budget line by line. The budget is not due until October, but this is more about framing the conversation. And that's a real surprise. I think we all expected that she would be very honest and very open about what she would need from the taxpayers, what she would need from Springfield. But our expectation is that's probably not what she'll do. She'll instead focus on the size of the problem.
Okay. It seems to me that there's a political reality that she's running up against, is that she, you know, there's 50 stakeholders here, 50 board members, if you will, in the city council that she has to give cover to, sway, you know, over, win over. That's a lot trickier than it would be if she had been mayor for a term already. You know, this is, you know, being a first couple of months mayor, there are a lot of people in City Hall that when new meat comes into City Hall, whether you come in as an alderman or you come in as the mayor, you come in or whatever, you know, all the old guys think, oh, I got you here. You know,
you're in charge.
Right, this is my jungle. This is not your jungle. And that's, and, you know, and she literally is, you know, she's the Lion King. She's coming in there. She's the one that really gets to run this thing. And the question is, has she, My sense is, I guess it's not even a question. My sense is that she hasn't gotten as far along in the cajoling part, in the politics part of this with those 50 aldermen as she needs to be, and she's already committed to going out and saying this. So she's going to try to create some tension here by spilling these facts in a dramatic way. I hope. I mean, I think she's capable of doing it that way. And she should be political about it in her speech and say, listen, this is what the problems are. This is how profound they are. She has to name the crisis and then give us the solution. And we
think that's exactly right, Ro. That's also my sense. You know, obviously, when she started meeting with aldermen this week, whatever solutions she had to the problem would start to leak out. But nothing has leaked out because she is not giving the aldermen solutions. We saw yesterday there were a group of progressive aldermen who were saying that they are worried that she will not keep her campaign promises, that she will not make massive investments in communities on the South and West side, and they were urging her to tax the wealthy. Now, I can tell you, though, she has privately told aldermen that she would rule out reinstating the corporate head tax. That's something that she's not willing to do. Also, a commuter tax. She's privately ruled that out. So, Ro, she is ruling out certain taxes, but she's not ruling in anything. She has not said that she would do a property tax increase. She's not being specific about what she wants from Springfield, even to the aldermen, who, of course, would have to authorize all of this. And it's so it's interesting because she's given a speech at Herald Washington. It's in an auditorium. The television stations are broadcasting it live. It's fascinating. You know, what is the point of this? Who is your audience?
Right.
And I think even after being on the job 101 days, the aldermen are still her audience. You're absolutely right. I don't think she has 26 votes for any plan. And I also don't think she's made up her mind about how we plug this billion-dollar budget hole.
Doesn't she also have to get citizens on her side here to then, you know, have the contact their aldermen to say that they're on board with this or they're not on board with that? I know one of the things that was said in advance of the speech is that she, when she did her rounds with the TV stations over this last few days, she was saying, I want input from the community. I want you to tell me how you'd like to solve this problem. And then I'm going to be really transparent about where we are, what resources we have already, and you tell me where you think we should cut, because I don't know how you tax your way out of this. Can you do that? Can you do that? Even all the things you just mentioned don't nearly get anywhere close to where we need to go.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, if you're talking about a tax on professional services, if you're talking about a real estate transfer tax on homes of more than $1 million, that doesn't equal $1 billion. So what is she going to do? Well, she, of course, ordered a hiring freeze. We also are beginning to hear that she has notified commissioners that they need to prepare for possible furloughs and layoffs. Now, that's something that wouldn't take effect until next year. That's something that she said she doesn't want to do, but we know that they are preparing to possibly do that. Might she look at the police and fire budgets? I don't know. We know that she'll be asking Springfield for help, but, you know, tonight at the speech, the House Budget Chair Greg Harris is here, and I went over and asked him, hey, what's the ask? What does she want you guys to do? And he says, well, she hasn't made the ask just yet. So it seems like we're very early in this process.
Yeah.
Again,
yeah.
I think the expectations were that we'd have answers, but I think she's still figuring out what she wants to do.
Tamani, you just put your finger right on it, which is that they I think they thought they'd be further along when they announced they were going to do this primetime speech, because it's a dramatic thing to do. Kim was just saying in the news, her first primetime speech. I can't remember the last primetime speech by a Chicago mayor, right? That wasn't about some dire situation. And I certainly don't remember one from Rahm Emanuel or Richard Daley. So this is a big deal. And so the optics of this, that confer this notion that something big is going to be happening here. She's going to have to. So she better fill with some dramatics here if she does not have solutions. So we'll see what happens. Tamon, thank you very much. Appreciate it,
Thanks,
sir.
Thanks, Tamon.
We'll see you on the TV.
My pleasure, guys.
All right, Tamon Bradley, WGN TV News.
Mm-hmm.
Kim Gordon. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis on 720 WGN, WGN everywhere.
Big night for the city with the mayor speaking. And even if we don't get specifics about how we dig ourselves out of this hole, it'll certainly be interesting to hear the tone of what the mayor says. And she says it's a road to transparency, mapping out the path forward.
I'd like her to get up there and go, holy crap, you're not going to believe what I just saw in there. Don't go in that room. Don't go in that room.
Like, she looks kind of horrified after she saw the numbers.
Remember when Rahm used to come out from behind the wall? There was like literally the wall would open up and he would come out.
Like, where did he come from?
And then he'd scare people.
Happen?
Like, he was like, you know, he'd come out and go, don't you ever look at me again. And then he would go back behind the wall, right? And then, and now, and then she's going to come out from behind that wall and be, oh God, oh God, oh God. You're not going to believe it. And if I were her, that's exactly what I would do.
Well,
I mean, if she has she doesn't have the city council locked down yet. So she doesn't know what she, I mean, and how could she, right? She's brand new on the job and new to this thing. She didn't come up through this system. She doesn't really know these people, right? She was an outsider coming in. She's an outsider with a business mind, a legal mind, and all that that's going to come in and try to fix this, try to wrap her brain around it and fix it. And she is literally the definition of nobody sent. I don't want nobody sent.
And I think voters elected her because of that.
72% of the voters elected her because of that.
Yes, and tossed out all the people who were people sent.
Yes.
Pretty quickly and authoritatively.
That may well be true, but you still got to get those people to go along with you because it's not an autocracy here. They got to be able to figure it out.
Well, I think they all understand the realities of this situation.
Really? Have you met these people in the city council?
At some point, you have to, right? Because you just can't keep borrowing, can you? Is that what you want to do, be junk bond status? I mean, when she took office, she was portraying it, and everyone was portraying it, as a $500 million budget hole. That in May, after she took office, the Rahm Emanuel administration said the shortfall is closer to $700 million because of the pensions didn't perform as well as they thought. And the borrowing practices were very expensive, more than we thought, and so it's actually 700. She's saying it's actually worse than that.
I'll bet you half the aldermen and city council wouldn't understand a word of what you just said. I honestly believe that.
But
they don't think of it that way. They think about street level politics, and they think that's somebody else's problem. The banks will figure it out, that's unfortunately. Well, that's what they do, and that's what
City has to figure it out,
right? But they figure that's something that, you know, somebody else will do. I think there's probably 10 aldermen who deal with this in a realistic way. And she's got to be able to cajole she needs 26 of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's got to figure out how she's going to be able to do that. All right, let's do this. Quick break, and then we'll come right back. Lori Lightfoot live right here, her State of the City. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlancis right here on 720 WGN. Coming up in just 2 minutes, Lori Lightfoot will take the stage at the Harold Washington Library and deliver bad news to the city of Chicago.
First State of the City address and the road ahead, the path forward.
Right.
Drink every time you hear the word sacrifice.
Now, the...
if you actually got Kool-Aid in front of you or some lemonade or something.
Right. Do not drink alcohol if you hear the word sacrifice.
No. Could be a rough night.
Yes, the emergency rooms will be filled if we do that. I know I'm going to be drinking during the speech, because that's what we do best around here.
Yeah.
This is a time to roll out the Knarble. And by the way, tomorrow, I should mention, it's an all-Knarble Friday.
Yeah, how about that?
Live music.
It's going to be awesome.
Vertical Horizon is going to be here. They're going to play throughout the show. It's White Sox will be joining us at about 5:45, but we'll continue to play the live music. We got a lot going on tomorrow, but it's all fun. Because whatever's going to happen here is not going to be fun.
I did just put some beer in the fridge.
Did you?
Yeah.
No, big college football night.
I know.
I mean, we'll be here until 7 o'clock,
right.
And we'll have your reaction to what Lori Lightfoot said. We are actually going to pay attention to this.
Sure.
Because we have to. But that doesn't mean that I'll be
monitoring the college football scene from the sports department.
Also, the Clemson game, you'll be watching that while this is going on?
Clemson, yeah. It's a handful of other big games.
Yeah. Okay. All I want to say is that if I were Lori Lightfoot right now,
I would be doing
what we were talking about earlier with the president. What if I have to go to the bathroom during this? Because this is a nervous-making kind of a moment.
It is. I mean, you think about it. She's speaking directly to voters because I think she needs to make the case that, you know,
she needs the voters to call the aldermen.
She does. That's exactly what she needs.
That's what, and aldermen have unlisted numbers in this city. I don't know if you know that.
They have people.
Right.
It's like hard to get past.
Right. You go to the alderman. You go to the alderman's office. It's often a different sort of a situation where there's like nobody there. All right. It's 6 o'clock. This is 720 WGN Chicago, where Chicago stories are told 24/7. All right. We're awaiting Lori Lightfoot to step up to the podium here at the Harold Washington Library, and she will be speaking directly to us and directly to the city and directly to the United States of America, and she's going to blink with her eyes and send in Morse code, please save me. All right, so we have, let me now take you into the room here.
Okay.
Where we hear all the different TV folks back there all kind of talking. Not, I don't think the public's invited to this, right?
It looks like a pretty, it's a packed room at the Harold Washington Library, but it doesn't seem, there's no like standing room or anything. It looks
and we're told there's
quiet.
Several overflow rooms as well.
Oh.
Oh, boy.
I love the eavesdropping. I hope we hear. Guy's a clown. Off to a hot start.
Hot mic, hot mic.
Not again.
Yeah. So we'll be listening in here as we await her onto the stage.
I wonder how much math she's going to do.
But she could do it, though. See, I think that's the difference.
That is the difference.
If you look at her, she does have that sort of math teacher kind of a thing where she looks to go, I don't understand how you don't understand this. I got that look a lot when I was in school.
Yeah, you're familiar with it.
Yeah. What do you mean you don't understand this?
You just need to apply yourself.
I'm like, really? I don't understand it. Oh, we've just been handed the speech.
Hold on, 24 pages.
24. I could deliver the. That's going to be 25. That's going to be like 30 minutes.
Just read. Just do your version of the speech, Ro. Instead of dipping it.
You know what I can do? All right, hold on.
Just scan it for sacrifice.
Hold on. The first page.
You see sacrifice on the first page.
The first page. I do not necessary. I see the word necessary choices.
Dire. Daunting.
Second, transparency and engagement. Massive problem on page two.
Okay. Massive problem.
All right. Let's see here. This is Lori Lightfoot stepping up. Page three, foundational shift. Uh-oh.
Thank you.
Here's Mayor Lightfoot.
Thank you, please. Thank you. Good evening. Thank you for tuning in. Tonight I want to speak to you about the state of our city and our finances. The city's finances impact every aspect of our lives as Chicagoans, guiding how and where we invest in people, property, and places. How the city handles its finances, your precious tax dollars, defines who we are and, importantly, the kind of city we will be. We have some hard choices to make. There's no doubt about that, and I will not sugarcoat that reality. But I am confident with the incredible talent in this city working together, we can make the necessary choices that will put us on sound fiscal footing, not just for today, but for the future. Tonight is not a budget speech where I would lay out in detail every expense and every source of revenue. That will come in October. Instead, tonight is an opportunity where we are to explain where we are today with a budget gap for next year, the steps we have taken to close that gap to date, and ask for your help. We need to come together and find solutions to the tough problems that we face, and we need to do that now. I promised you as mayor that I would usher in a new era of good governance whose hallmarks would be integrity, transparency, and robust civic engagement. That is what I have endeavored to do every day since the last 100 days. And tonight will be no different. Let me begin by telling you, we walked into a staggeringly large deficit for next year. And what was worse, we were not left with any credible plan on how to fix this massive problem. If we followed the old playbook, we could have tried to muscle through another historically large property tax increase, relied on a massive borrowing scheme, shortchange pensions, or some measure of all of the above. I fundamentally rejected all of those approaches. So what we did instead was rolled up our sleeves and got to work to address this fiscal crisis. We focused on creating a foundational shift in the way that the city not only balances its budget, but also in the way in which we looked to the future. First, by in the short term, creating structural efficiencies in the way we spend your tax dollars, laying the foundation for a strategy that shifts the focus to investing in our people, our neighborhoods, and not just in our central business district. We are working to create a real growth strategy that deals everyone in, regardless of neighborhood or zip code. In just over 100 days, we have not solved every problem. But we have laid a foundation on which we can build a better, fairer, and more prosperous Chicago for all. And let me share some of the things we have done so far. I vowed to you during the campaign that I would be a better fiduciary of your tax dollars, and we are well on our way. First, we started the process of bringing integrity back to government. You know that on my first day in office, I signed an executive order ending the practice known as aldermanic prerogative. Next, we passed one of the most comprehensive ethics reform packages in recent memory. These included placing restrictions on outside employment, expanding oversight to ensure every elected official plays by the same rules, increasing fines for ethics violations, and limiting the influence of lobbyists in City Hall. How does government reform and integrity relate to city finances? Well, if you don't have a government that you trust, one that has legitimacy, we cannot move forward together, making the tough but necessary decisions that will transform our future. A government that you can trust because we operate transparently is a core tenet of our democracy. These reforms that we have made are a critical component of showing you, not just saying it, but showing you we heard you and we will be better fiscal stewards of your hard-earned tax dollars. Aside from ethics reform, we have also started combing the city budget and contracts for efficiencies and savings. Here's where we are so far. We've taken important steps to professionalize the $100 million a year workers' compensation program. That program had been under the control of a single alderman who is now under federal indictment. There was zero transparency in that program. An independent audit found that well over 600 claims were open for over a decade without any resolution. And even though the city had paid almost $300 million towards these open claims, and the program was ripe for fraud, waste, and abuse. Just by professionalizing that program, we expect to reap significant savings. I also hired and empowered the city's first chief risk officer, Tamika Puckett, to address and identify areas of risk in city's departments before they become a costly mess. This is a significant development in your favor. We have also started looking at our borrowing practices and making changes there to save money. For example, we will be replacing high-cost debt, kind of like how homeowners refinance their mortgages, which we expect to generate $100 million in savings alone. We eliminated $1.4 billion in short-term borrowing from big banks, which is expected to save $22 million in interest and fees. We have also canceled contracts with vendors who have not delivered goods or services as promised. We will never tolerate being shortchanged in any bargain that we have struck. We are also cracking down on absenteeism and medical role abuse. It should be an obvious point that city employees are expected to work a full day for a full day's pay. Now, most city employees work hard every day to deliver for the residents of this great city, but some do not. Those employees have been able to game the system for far too long. They make a mockery of the people who come to work every day and deliver for our residents. And those games are over. On August 20th, we implemented a hiring freeze across city government, and we are implementing measures to crack down on departments that have significant unbudgeted overtime expenses. And working with the chairman of city council committees, we have ended the practice where certain committees exceeding their budgets by hundreds of thousands of dollars as a matter of routine. City council leadership understands that everyone must live within their means, and I am grateful for their partnership. Each of these measures represents important, serious steps towards addressing our financial challenges. And come October, I'll address those challenges further in my budget speech. In addition to these initial efforts to get our fiscal house in order and disrupt the status quo, we have also taken steps to better invest in our people and our neighborhoods. Our long-term solution out of this fiscal mess must be premised on a growth strategy that deals in all of our neighborhoods. Small businesses and homeowners, individuals and community-based institutions must be part of this strategy. We must expand opportunity, expand our tax base, and expand our population. We need to continue to give residents and businesses of all stripes reasons to stay, to come, and to grow. There is much to do to realize these ambitious but necessary goals, which are critical to our long-term fiscal health. One of the things that I am most proud of as mayor is our unequivocal support of immigrant and refugee communities. Now, why do I reference this important work in a speech about municipal finance? Because our growth strategy has to include continuing the reality of Chicago as a welcoming city. Contrary to the xenophobic rhetoric, immigrants contribute to our economy in significant ways. They always have. There is a reason why Little Village is a home to the second most vital commercial corridor in our city. But when people live in fear, they don't shop in their local businesses. They don't go to work to make those businesses thrive. I stand with immigrants and refugees because it is the only moral choice. In addition to being present in immigrant communities, I have spent time in neighborhoods that have historically not seen investment or even the presence of a mayor in years. I have listened to the stories of low-income and working-class families like the one I grew up in, mothers and fathers who are struggling to put food on their tables and for whom one unexpected bill could mean financial disaster. What I knew before and what has been reinforced over these last months is that we need to build additional supports for low-income and working families because poverty is constantly knocking on their doors. Lifting people up and out of the grip of poverty will not only close the wealth gap with all of its terrible consequences and expand the pipeline of workers, but will close life expectancy and health gaps that rob people of their ability to fulfill their God-given potential. This is both a moral and fiscal imperative. Thus, our pathways to fiscal health have to run through households and neighborhoods like Roseland and Rogers Park, Austin and Inglewood, from the southeast and the southwest, and neighborhoods like Pullman and Park Manor. We must lead with public investment along with private partnerships to catalyze neighborhoods where generational poverty has people in its crushing grip. We have taken other initial steps towards creating a thriving economy for all. This includes the passage of the Fair Workweek legislation. Through the leadership of Alderman Susan Sedlowski Garza, and with the support of business groups, we passed legislation championed for years by organized labor that will give thousands of workers predictable schedules, which means predictable cash flow, and that makes for better, more loyal employees and stronger families. We also took meaningful steps along with City Clerk Anna Valencia to curb Chicago's addiction to regressive fines and fees system that has punished those least able to bear the financial burden. We instituted reforms on payment plans, reducing city sticker penalties, and ending driver's license suspensions for non-moving violations. The city of Chicago was headed in the wrong direction by sending people into bankruptcy, taking their cars, and preventing people from being able to work and contribute to the economy. We have given people the ability to be made whole again, and more to come. And we will institute a $15 minimum wage in Chicago starting in 2021 and not wait till 2025. And we are going to end water shutoffs for residents facing significant financial hardships, because water is a basic human right. These initial steps are important to shore up individuals and families who aren't just living paycheck to paycheck, but are constantly on the cusp of financial ruin. They need the ability to go to bed at night knowing that they can take care of themselves and their families. Chicago has not abandoned them, and growth in financial wealth must include everyone. But even with these efforts, there is so much more that needs to be done. For all that we are doing and all that we will do as a city, we are also a city held back, unable to live up to our full potential due to the enormous systemic financial challenges we have struggled with for decades, and even greater financial challenges we face going forward. While our path forward will be challenging, we will do it the right way, together, with the values of transparency, equity, and inclusion shaping our decisions every step of the way. But the reality is, despite all these efforts, we still have a sizable gap to fill next year and beyond. When I started as mayor on May 20th, we walked into a projected deficit for next year of $1 billion. Yes, that's billion with a B. And as a result of the efforts we have made to date and changes in our forecasting, that number has decreased by almost $200 million. But that still means that the budget gap for 2020 is $838 million. And if $838 million sounds like it's big, it's because it is. It's the largest in our recent history. A third of that gap comes from increased pension costs. Another third, increased labor costs. And nearly $100 million comes from increases in servicing our debt, and $90 million comes from anticipated lawsuits. And nearly $100 million comes from a variety of other costs. To put this in perspective, folks, for every dollar you pay to the city, 80 cents goes to pay for the cost of personnel and benefits along with pensions. But let me be clear. I don't see the provision of pensions or city workers as the problem. The key problem is a decades-long failure to meet our pension obligations and fix the structural problems that have led to this crisis. Now, there are limits to what any mayor can do alone to generate revenue. We have and will continue to explore every reasonable option. And reasonable, to me, means relieving the financial burden on those least able to afford it and not driving business out of Chicago. These two principles will guide my decision-making about revenue options. As your mayor, I cannot in good faith promise you that I will take any option off the table to tackle this crisis, whether it's through budget reductions or by raising revenue. But what I can tell you is that I will work tirelessly to ensure whatever options we take will be made with transparency and with working folks in mind. And on this, we have already gotten started. We are committed to a graduated real estate transfer tax. This will bring relief to homeowners whose houses sell for under $500,000, while owners with higher valued homes will pay more of their fair share. We are committed to addressing homelessness and housing instability and putting real resources towards these problems. We are exploring options to address rampant congestion that solves the problem of traffic, pollution, and other issues while simultaneously bringing in a fair share of funding. And we are working to develop a policy to stand up a robust cannabis industry, one that will not only generate revenue for the city, but creates new business and job opportunities for black and brown people who have been the victims of the war on drugs and who, to date, have been mostly excluded from legitimate medical and recreational markets as entrepreneurs. And importantly, we are pursuing a Chicago casino that creates a dedicated revenue stream to pay for our pension costs. If we get the tax structure right, this will represent a structural solution to address long-term problems, not a one-time fix. Not only that, it will also create thousands of jobs, help fund the state's capital plan, and stop the flow of over $200 million in gaming revenue to Indiana. As an independent study made clear, Chicago and Springfield will need to work together to get the tax structure right in order to move this plan forward. Getting it right represents a win for both the city and our state, and there's no reason why we can't arrive at a solution. But we have to be honest with ourselves. If such an agreement isn't made, if we don't secure this casino and the revenue that it creates, we will then be forced to make painful choices on finding other revenue sources. And we all know what those are, the sources we desperately wish to avoid. There still remains more work to do to close a serious budget gap. While we are working towards balancing this year's revenue with this year's cost, 2 years from now, in 2021, we'll have to figure out how to pay for the increased annual cost of over $200 million for public safety services, followed by another increase of $400 million for municipal and labor pensions the year after that. In other words, no matter what we do for this coming budget, Chicago will be on the hook for over a half a billion in new pension obligations over the next 3 years. But as I made clear many times, pension obligations are a challenge we must meet. Dedicated city workers have fulfilled their careers with the agreement that they will retire with the dignity and certainty pensions afford. Our obligations are not optional. And I will take every action necessary to fulfill the promise we have made. So where do we go from here? As challenging as our finances are, the truth is, Chicago is not alone. It's a story being played out across our state. Cities and towns in every corner of Illinois are grappling with rising pension costs. Just like Chicago, they've sold their assets in order to make their pension contributions, only to find that their pensions are still poorly funded. And just like Chicago, many of these towns have been downgraded by rating agencies because their pension burdens are so severe. This increases the cost of borrowing. Just like Chicago has historically done, they've turned to raising property taxes. I want to avoid that measure as much as possible. But if we don't get the structural changes that our pensions need, we will be presented with very hard and limited options. Solving our shared pension problems will require the entire state to come together. People in this state know, as I do, that I-80 is not a border. There cannot be a Chicago versus the rest of the state. All of Illinois. All of Illinois is looking for solutions, and to really solve these problems, we have to be partners in reform. Working together in solidarity towards a fair and sustainable solution for every Illinoisan. Our fates are intertwined. That is why I intend to continue working with Governor Pritzker, the legislative leaders, and other state lawmakers, regardless of party or geography. Illinois is only as strong as its cities and towns. We have to do the right thing and work together to solve this problem once and for all. I am willing to lead this charge, but I need you to join me. I am going to press everyone involved to make sure that we solve these problems now. And they must be solved in order for us to realize our full potential of who we can be. It's a vision that sees us continuing our growth downtown, but extending it to the neighborhoods and communities. It's a vision that has us stemming the exodus of families here in Chicago and across Illinois. Doing that means creating good jobs, safe streets, and quality education for residents and their families. It means housing that's affordable for Chicagoans so we can build wealth and become anchors in our neighborhoods. As we move forward towards announcing our budget this October, my commitment to you is to hear from you and to be open and transparent and inclusive as possible. It's time to shine a light on the budget-making process. We've already done this by creating a more transparent budget forecast, which will be released tonight. It includes a summary that Chicagoans can use to understand where their tax dollars are actually going. And I want to hear from you in the coming weeks. We will be hosting 4 budget town halls across Chicago in order to truly hear from residents, including our city's young people. As I said on Inauguration Day, we should never settle for dividing up a shrinking pie or pitting one part of the city against another. Yes, some of our solutions will be hard. Yes, they may involve putting ourselves at risk. And if that means that I sacrifice myself politically, so be it, in pursuit of the right thing. Friends, we don't have a moment to lose. Chicago is and must remain the economic engine of our state and the entire Midwest. Our challenges are great, but our ability to solve them is even greater if we work together. It's only by working together as a city and a state that we can become what we need to be, to build and grow better together for a brighter future. Now is the time. Yeah. Together, let's seize this moment to do the right thing, to chart a new course, and to put our city on a stronger path once and for all. Thank you, and God bless you, and God bless the great city of Chicago.
That's Lori Lightfoot, live from the Harold Washington Library in downtown Chicago, making a almost a 30-minute speech about the future of the city of Chicago. As we knew going into this, as we were told going into this, there weren't specific solutions on the table. She did hint toward a couple, and I think the most dramatic of them is the transfer tax, the real estate transfer tax, and that will affect homes over $500,000. Not $1 million as originally talked about. She floated the $500,000 threshold in the speech just a few minutes ago,
which captures a number of
much larger
swath of the city for sure.
Yeah, and it reaches into neighborhoods that have just recently stabilized. You have homes in the near Northwest Side and the West Loop, and on the parts of the South Side that have grown exponentially. South Loop, all those areas where just in the last 10 years, you had houses that went from $250,000 to $550,000 and $600,000. Mm-hmm. And so that's really going to be I don't know. She's floating out that threshold as the lowest threshold. I don't know where that goes. But
again, it's a transfer tax, so it's when you sell your home that would get it, that would get into effect. Only then. It's not an annual thing, because we all are feeling the pinch of the property taxes being rising, and dramatically so for a lot of folks in most recent years. She hinted that she's trying to avoid that, and that she's also trying not to balance the budget on the backs of those who can least afford it, but that the pension problem is a major problem. And in 3 years, there's another $500 million that we need to revisit and come up with new funding for. So she talked about, I thought it was interesting, she talked about not only the hiring freeze, but cracking down on overtime. They're getting borrowing practices under their watch, managing the debt to try to find, already they found $100 million in savings there. But you're still at this math number of this $838 million that they're trying to fill with new means.
As I said on Inauguration Day, we should never settle for dividing up a shrinking pie or pitting one part of the city against another. Yes, some of our solutions will be hard. Yes, they may involve putting ourselves at risk. And if that means that I sacrifice myself politically, so be it, in pursuit of the right thing.
That's Lori Lightfoot, most dramatic moment of the speech that
really
she just
was.
Gave.
When's the last time you heard a public official in Chicago say that?
Well, after 100 days being in office, perhaps that's her, like, listen, I'm not planning on being here after 2023, but listen, if I am.
I read it a different way. I read it that I'm elected by the people as an agent of reform, and that's what I'm going to do. And if it means that it's too much, that people don't like it anymore, then that's okay.
Mm-hmm. But I see it both ways. I think you're right, but I also think
100 days.
I think she gets that this is an intractable situation, and if you want to be the mayor of Chicago, for the power of being the mayor of Chicago and the prestige of being the mayor of Chicago, or as a stepping stone to something greater,
or just to see how long you can stick around and how many of your friends and family members you can put in office.
Right. That's a motivation for a lot of people in public service around this country.
Mm-hmm. No question.
And it may have been motivation for some people. Listen, I think the Dailies loved Chicago. I'm not one of those people who looks back on that those two long reigns and says that that was just solely about self improvement or the family. Yes, people did get helped along the way. There's no question about it. But I think that there was a certain amount of, I mean, you watch the way that the city has grown. Right. And the city is not immune. Other cities are not immune to the same sorts of problems that we have had. As Lori Lightfoot pointed out in her speech.
Directly.
That there, you know, even in the state of Illinois, she was making an appeal to the citizens of the state of Illinois, especially those yahoos that want to separate Illinois from Chicago, to which I say, bring it on. Because then we'll be able to keep all of our tax dollars and solve our problems. But that is not going to happen.
But she pointed a strong finger and very directly called out Alderman Burke as a sign of politicians from days gone by, as running the $100 million workers' comp program, and that had zero transparency, rife with fraud. That's been professionalized. That's no longer in place anymore. He's under federal indictment, and we're moving on cleaning these types of things up. So she is talking about housekeeping. She is saying, I'm going back and reviewing the way things have always been done, including our borrowing practices, and we're looking for ways to do it a lot better, have more accountability, and use taxpayer dollars in a way that is more responsible.
There was also this moment.
We're also cracking down on absenteeism and medical role abuse. It should be an obvious point that city employees are expected to work a full day for a full day's pay. Now, most city employees work hard every day to deliver for the residents of this great city, but some do not. Those employees have been able to game the system for far too long. They make a mockery of the people who come to work every day and deliver for our residents, and those games are over.
Alderman Brian Hopkins is joining us right now. And Alderman, the second ward, I should mention. What was your overall take on the speech?
Well, there was very little new information presented tonight. I had my budget notebook and my pen with me, and the speech was almost over before I realized I really hadn't written anything down. I was waiting to take notes, and the only thing I heard that was new was the figure of $838 million, which she outlined as her current version of the structural deficit. So other than that, there was a lot of political formula, a lot of political gamesmanship, and kind of setting the stage for you know, a future tax increase that I think she's going to hit us with in the coming months. So this was really more of a political speech than a budget speech. We'll see the budget in October.
You say tax increase. Do you mean income tax? Do you mean, I guess it can't be income tax. You mean other real estate property tax?
Yeah, the only one she specifically mentioned was the real estate transfer tax. You know, she did talk in general terms about a property tax, but, you know, her options are limited. If she is looking for the kind of revenue that she talked about today, near $1 billion, there really is no other source of funding like that other than the property tax. So she doesn't want to grab that third rail right now, and I don't blame her. I wouldn't either. In fact, I think that was the veiled reference at the end of her speech to, you know, having the courage to take a political risk, you know, even if she has to take the heat for it. I think that was her way of saying she's not afraid to suggest that she's going to want to raise property taxes, but she just didn't want to go there tonight.
I noticed that the transfer tax originally was first floated for homes in Chicago worth over $1 million, and tonight she said $500,000 was the threshold for that. That includes a lot more homes, doesn't it?
Yeah, so people who own a home worth more than $500,000, tonight they just learned that they're considered rich in the eyes of the city of Chicago. And I think they probably would have a different take on that. But it seems to me that she's realized the price tag of some of the social programs that she's talking about are going to require that type of revenue shift. And this is an example. If we're going to pay to give people who own homes of $500,000 or less a break, then that break by definition has to be paid for by everyone who owns a home worth more than $500,000. You squeeze the toothpaste and, you know, it comes out both ends. So that's what she was talking about there. But there were no specifics. Again, we don't know what percentage increase she's talking about. It could be a very modest percentage increase, you know, that wouldn't necessarily raise any objections. You know, $500 or $600 or $800 on a real estate transaction, most people are just going to shrug that off. $10,000, $20,000, you know, people are going to react very differently to that type of increase in a real estate transaction. So without the specifics, we really don't know what we're dealing with tonight. And again, this was not a budget address. There were very few specifics that were offered here. We're going to have to wait until October before we see the meat on the potatoes here.
What about her talk about the other side, the cost side here? Obviously, she wants to protect pensions. I think that is the moral and responsible thing to do. But what about active budgets? Where do you see cuts coming from?
Yeah, well, here I'm going to back her up completely. She came in and did the same thing that every new executive typically does when they come into a government. They take a fresh set of eyes. They look at operations. They look for the low-hanging fruit to save money. Typically, they don't find too much in terms of low-hanging fruit. You know, it's easy to find savings that are glaring at you, so you have to look a little deeper. And she's been doing that, and to her credit. But you're talking about a relatively small percentage of the overall picture. You're never going to balance a budget the size of the city of Chicago's, you know, by saving money on office supplies and, you know, finding more efficient ways to operate. That's not an excuse for not doing it. You have to do that. You should do that. And she has been doing that. But that isn't going to solve an $800 million structural deficit.
No. So we just played that piece of sound right before you joined us where she talked about I want to back up. Actually, we Anna had mentioned that she went directly after Ed Burke and talked about the $100 million workman's comp situation. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, that person is now under federal indictment and we're going to clean that up. Can there really be a savings out of workman's comp? And what, and can you define for us what it is that she's talking about? Was the fraud or mismanagement there?
Well, there actually was a management audit recently performed of the entire workers' comp program, and the conclusion was that the system had vulnerabilities that, that fraud and waste could thrive in. It didn't identify any specific instances of fraud and waste. It just said, you know, we could do better than this. It's a $100 million program, and there probably is fraud. Absolutely, there's fraud. I'll tell you this. There's fraud in every workers' compensation program in America, whether it's a government or a privately run program at a factory. People fake back injuries, all that sort of thing. It happens. What you typically find out, though, is if you put forth an aggressive anti-fraud program, you have to pay for it. Investigators get paid to do what they do. Investigations themselves cost money. It's actually more expensive than you think to go after that type of fraud. And the goal, of course, is to uncover more fraud to get a net savings than the cost of having the anti-fraud program. But just like I said about, you know, earlier, trying to find efficiencies within government, just because you're not going to solve all your problems by doing that is no excuse to not do it. You should do it, and it is definitely time to reform the workers' comp program, and clearly that's underway right now. But you're not going to find the types of glaring, obvious $100 million-plus dollar solutions that are just laying there on the table waiting to be picked up.
Yeah, I think her bet is that when it isn't under the watchful eye of one person with no oversight, that they're going to find a lot of ways to run it more efficiently. I you know, we'll have to see on that. But let me ask you about something
else.
Well,
did you notice she didn't put a figure on how much she would like to save? She didn't even tell us what her goal is for saving in the workers' comp program, and I think that's because she recognizes the peril in putting out a false expectation and saying we're going to save, you know, $50 million when she's done reforming the workers' comp program, and the total comes in more like $5 million. She didn't want to take that risk, so she didn't put a specific number on it. That was intentional.
When it came to pensions, she also talked about 80 cents of every dollar we give the city goes to personnel and pensions. She says, I'm not saying I don't want to do anything about that. The pensions should be guaranteed to people who've been promised them. But she mentioned the casino. The Chicago casino is going to be the thing that helps us get through the pension extra money that we need to spend. I didn't understand that that was exactly equatable. And if it doesn't happen, then what? You know, then what do we do? Have you heard much about how the Chicago casino is moving forward? Because last we heard, it was the Illinois Gaming Board said that you wouldn't get anybody to be able to make money on a Chicago casino the way it was structured from a tax and fee basis.
Well, I will say this. We are closer to reality in having a Chicago-based casino than we ever have been in my lifetime. That is not to say we're there. That's to say that it's now actually on the table, and it could, maybe, possibly, might happen. There's still some major hurdles to clear, and I read the consultant study, and I agree with it. There's no gaming company in America that's going to come and take those terms that are being laid out, where 72% of all the revenue gets taken off the top before a dollar is left to pay for the cost of running the casino. You know, a casino is a profitable enterprise. We all know that. But there's still costs involved in managing it and paying the employees and paying the lighting bill and the electric bill and all that. So you have to be realistic about that. And what was laid out there just isn't realistic. So can we hit the reset button now that there seems to be an acceptance that a Chicago casino could happen? We just have to come up with terms that make it feasible to run the thing and to make a profit and to keep that money in Chicago. That was one of the biggest applause lines she got when she said there's $200 million going to Indiana right now across state lines that should stay here in Chicago. I think everybody agrees with that.
All right, but the question is, how do you make that change? How do you change the terms of the agreement with whomever it is that's going to build and operate the casino? Is that something that the state of Illinois has to do or the city of Chicago has to do?
Well, it's a combination. She seems to have a pretty good working relationship with Governor Pritzker. That's the type of thing that two people need to get in the room together with just the top-level staff and work that out. The various legislative bodies involved here, you know, my role in the city council and also the General Assembly, need to yield to the leadership of the mayor and the governor on this. It has to happen at that high level. And if it does, if they come to an agreement, I believe the city council and the General Assembly will fall into line and will pass the necessary changes to make a Chicago casino happen. There's too much money on the table now. We can sense it. You know, it's like I said, it's for the first time, it's actually viable. It's actually real. We need that money. It's currently going out of state. Let's do the right thing and keep it here.
Is that underway? Is that in motion right now?
as far as the discussion between the two of them. I don't know that it is. I've heard from top staff here in the city that there have been some communication as far as the specifics of that. I don't know. I don't know if they're having those conversations now, but I will go out on a limb and predict that they will be having those discussions in the coming weeks.
What about, so what's Alderman's appetite here for what this budget will likely look like with the taxes and the kinds of things it'll include? And will our Alderman, are you guys prepared to step up and find alternate sources to meet the reality of the financial times we're in?
Well, I think we are. You know, I've had a budget briefing with the mayor. I sat down with her and her fiscal staff, and now here at this address, which, you know, really wasn't billed as a budget address, but that was kind of where the anticipation was focused on. And I still don't know. I still haven't been given any specifics. Towards the end of her speech, she alluded to some more information that would be provided later tonight. I'm anxiously awaiting that. I don't have it. If she really does want an inclusive participatory process, and she wants us as legislators to be there at her side, well, then give us the material. Give us the information. You know, I walked out of that budget briefing empty-handed. I wasn't provided with any of the supporting documents. I have no idea where they came up with that $838 million figure. You know, she touched on a couple of things tonight, said a third of that was pensions. But I'm ready to go. My pencil is sharp, and I'm ready to work. But I need the material that they've been working from in order to provide some feedback and some comments and suggestions.
All right, Alderman Brian Hopkins, thank you very much. Appreciate
your
time,
Alderman.
Sir.
Okay, thanks, guys.